Good morning, everyone. We have Agency 5, Department of Education, Superintendent Hill and Mr. Fred Hansen with us. And if you'd like to start with your budget by introducing your crew with you today.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, mm-hmm. and Mr. Co-Chairman and Joint Committee members of Appropriations. With me today, joining me is Fred Hansen, Wyoming Department of Education's Chief Financial Officer. We do have various members of our team here who are here to answer your questions as appropriate and also to observe this important process. I would like to start, and if each one would just stand and say their name. John Masters.
John Masters. Morning, Drew Dilley.
Why don't you tell them what your title is?
Yeah.
Okay. No, we have new
people. Education Chief Information Officer, Division Director for Information Management Division.
Good morning, Jed Ciccarelli, School Foundation Supervisor.
Good morning, Greg Hansen. I work in the Finance Division.
Sam Shumway, Counsel for the Superintendent.
I'm Dave.
David Holbrook, Federal Programs Division Director.
Good morning. I'm Deb Lindsay. I'm the Director of State Assessment.
Julie McGee, Director for Standards, Learning, and Accountability.
Good morning. Tiffany Dobler, Special Programs Division Director.
Good morning. Terry Wigert, Division Director for Support Systems and Resources, various programs.
Good morning. Megan Harper, Human Resources Supervisor.
Good morning, Christine Steele. I'm an instructional leader for operations.
All right. Anyone else? Good. Well, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you, and thank you for the opportunity, Madam Chairman, to present our 2013-14 supplemental budget. When the governor published his budget memo last June, he wrote, "This is a time for fiscal restraint." As a member of many state commissioners and boards, as well as supervising a $1.9 billion agency, I fully understand that this is indeed a time for fiscal restraint in state government. My department's supplemental budget contains no additional funding requests. Last May, we submitted a proposal on the 8% general fund budget cuts to A&I. In July, we reviewed those budget amounts with the Joint Interim Education Committee. During our meeting with the JEC, they recommended certain changes. Their requests were reasonable, and I asked my staff to make the necessary adjustments to the budget. The governor also agreed with the JEC's recommendations and incorporated them into the recommended budget before you today. In October, my staff and I met with the governor to review our budget. He asked me to give further consideration on cuts that might adversely affect some of our programs. I gave this concern considerable thought and wrote to him asking that the 8% cuts be restored to the visually handicapped services, to the deaf and hard of hearing outreach, and to the state career technical education. The governor agreed with my thoughts, which we can discuss later in our presentation, and restored those proposed reductions. He also restored $50,000 in data technology budget after consulting with ETS. And speaking of ETS, our budget request reflects the five positions that have been transferred since July 1st of 2012. In addition, we sent two positions to ETS at the end of the last biennium, and two time-limited AWAC positions were also transferred from the Department of ETS, or from our department to ETS. This budget, for your consideration today, has a total decrease of $849,657. I am confident, like the governor, that we will meet the fiscal challenges we face in the department's operations, and we will be stronger and more effective as we move forward. Madam Chairman, with your permission, I will ask Fred Hansen to give the committee a brief overview of the department's budgets. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Superintendent Hill and Mr. Hansen. If you'd like to go through the process.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The committee should have in front of them this one-page document.
Fred, I just want to make sure that everyone has a copy. We have new members to the JEC that may not have one yet. And I just want to make certain, okay, that everyone. Yeah, that's Don and just Jeb. Bob's got it. Okay. We're ready to go.
Madam Chair, for the benefit, for the memory of the old members and the benefit of the new members, Department of Education actually has two budgets. We're Agency 005, which has most of our operations and our federal programs, and we're Agency 205, which has is all school foundation and is predominantly funds that flow through to the districts for the most part. So on this page, you'll see both of those agencies together, starting with Agency 005. And what I've done here, I've given you the unit number, the title of the unit, the director of that unit, of that division that operates that budget, who's here today. And then we start with the final 13-14 budget bill numbers. I show you the proposed cuts that Superintendent Hill mentioned that we came up with back in May. And then when we met with the JEC in July, as she mentioned, we changed our 8% request along their lines. And then the governor made further adjustments in his recommendations in the next column. In the next to last column, I've got the IT changes and then the revised request. And this mirrors the document you have in front of you on our budget. So we have two budgets that total $1.917 billion. If you'll go back to the very first column that gives the budget numbers, I put an asterisk beside those budgets that were included in a footnote in Agency 005 and the same footnote in Agency 205 that moved those budgets into an education testing assessment account to the state auditor's office, with a process of bringing those funds back to us as needed through a request process. So I've highlighted those for your review. You can see, as Superintendent Hill said, there are no requests for any additional funds in any budget. And so for your review today, we have the 8% proposed cuts as recommended by the governor and the IT changes. Madam Chair, are there any questions on our overall budget?
Right. Fred, I think what we should do is just start with the first unit and just flip through like we typically do in reviewing the budget and just highlight that too and go along with this sheet. Is that okay?
That'll be great.
All right, great. And then if we have community members that would like to ask questions, it would be probably a little easier and we'd be on the page. So.
Madam Chair, the first budget for your review today, then, I think, would be found on page 15, the
right.
State Board of Education.
6101, yes.
Right. So that general fund budget began with an 8% cut of $8,002, and the JEC preferred that that budget remain intact 100%. So
Okay. We
restored that and the governor agreed.
Great. All right. Perfect. You can continue.
Then the next one is the superintendent's office. The superintendent's office took the full 8% cut and then also had a slight increase to make up for some of the restoration to other budgets we'll talk about in a minute here. So
Okay. Basically
it's the 8% cut.
Good. Continue.
Next budget, it's very close to home for me. It's the finance unit's budget. And we took our 8% cut, and after visiting with the JEC in July, we took the additional $8,002 that had been planned for the state board, and our staff looked at it and decided that we could take the additional hit in our professional fees category. So what it does for us then is we could live with it as is. If there are any bills that come up that require contract services, we'll address that in those bills. So. All right, then. Reading assessment on page 26 is the first restricted budget that we come to that's under the ETA, and it had planned, because it's general funds, we planned for an 8%. Yes, sir.
If you'll go back to page 18 of the budget. And, Fred, the initial part of the budget, you've got a request for multiple changes starting at page 7. And I assume then that if you look at page 18, unit 6102, is this a breakdown of the changes that or funding changes you're wanting to see? And are those, does that unit change correspond to the summary that's of all changes on page 7?
Mr. Hansen? And I will note that on page 7, that if you go down that chart, that there are unit 6102 and there are positions 64, 86, and 87 listed there.
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, yes. The changes you'll see in these various budgets on positions are reflected in the summary on page 7. It was a planned net to zero change for the agency. However, that request was not recommended by the governor or included in these totals. So,
are these the subject of the B-11 that was turned down by the governor?
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, yes.
Now, have these funds actually been switched, or are they still the funds still resident in the original units?
Madam Chair, the budgets are still in the original units. They have not been switched.
Have the funds been moved by another process, including a GEMS process or otherwise?
The funds themselves, the budgetary amounts have not been moved. However, the actual positions that dealt with federal programs they are in different units.
Okay.
I don't understand that. Would you explain it, please?
Well, for example, as you see through here, we've had adjustments to federal programs and to state programs, because we've asked for it because if a person is in a federal program with a state D-1, then we need to charge their work to the federal program they're working in, and we need to get reimbursement from the feds for their salary.
How do you correspond with the federal government on those changes in job description or moving the positions? Do you then have to wait a period of time to get an approval from them so that you receive those funds and then you align those with this change here? What's the process?
Madam Chair, if a person is working full-time in a federal program, there's no paperwork involved. If they're part-time in one federal program, part-time in another federal program, or part-time in a state program, then a time and effort log is maintained. And the feds review those on a case-by-case basis as they do their audits. So, and then they're reviewed once a year by the state CPA firm who picks certain federal programs for review. They're reviewed again at that time.
And then does the federal program work on a calendar basis so that, like, you need to draw down those funds by the end of this year, December, or do they go through our fiscal year?
Madam Chair, they don't go through our fiscal year. The federal government's fiscal year starts October the 1st, ends September the 30th, but then there's a tidings period that actually allows it to go all the way through December 31st of the following year.
And so with these changes that you've requested, have you drawn down the funds, then the full amount that's due you from the federal government for these positions?
I believe we have, Madam Chair, this past month, yes.
In the past month. So there's a lag time for you to reconcile.
This particular year, there was a lag time because at the start of the B-11 process in July, we were directed to move all the positions into the D-1 funding. Okay. And we were directed by A&I budget to do that. So we did that, and then after we got notice the B-11 would not be approved and the supplemental request, I had to move the federal positions that were affected back into the correct federal budget. And so we did GEMs.
That's when you did your
yes, jump. We did the GEMs. Okay. So we could draw down those federal funds and be absolutely 100% correct with our federal budgets.
Senator Meyer, thank you.
Senator.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman.
Senator Bebout.
Fred, just a question on more of a procedural one so I can track and figure out how to read these charts. And Senator Nicholas brought up, like on page 7, as I look through this, I'll see like a position 064. It's about halfway down on page 7 is in unit 6102. And it's a general fund thing, and then you see it later popping up in another area, which is a different unit number, and the position is the same. So what I'm trying to figure out in just in a broad sense is this is the 28 positions that the B-11 was requested for, and every one of them starts in one position like 64 in a unit and goes to a different unit. So is that how you would track it?
Madam Chair, sir, yes.
And then, Madam Chairman, the second question is a general one. Are most of these consistently moving from one area or one unit into another area, or are they all sort of dispersed independently in different things in the federal funds? And you don't have to answer that now. What I'd like to know is just a broad overlook, like from 30,000 feet, as to a summary of them. If each one of them are different and independent, then that's fine, and don't worry about it. But if there's a general way to say, okay, 28 positions, 22 moved because of this, 6 moved because of that or whatever, and that's not anything that you need to tell me today. If you could just present that in a simple thing that says 26 for this is why I did it, and this 6 is why, you know, just if there's that kind of a breakdown so I can track and see. And like 70 is one that, I mean, they're all there. 64 actually is in 6102, but it moves to 6104. The general funds come in, the general funds go out. It's just a position move. And just to be able to understand it better, that's what I'm looking for.
Madam Chair, we have
reasons why, just to figure out what you did. Fair enough.
Madam Chair, we have to provide that information.
That's a good idea. And if you could, if when you're provided the general purpose, and tell us whether or not the general purpose of the employee changed. So, I mean, if you took an employee that was doing special ed and moved it to accounting, for example, we'd like to be able to identify, are you essentially moving them from federal funds to state funds, or are you actually changing the purpose, repurposing the employee? Is that something
sure,
you
yes,
show by
well,
chart?
We'll include that in our report.
Okay. In general, do you know whether any of these employees were repurposed and assigned to new tasks that were not originally contemplated by the old budgets?
I believe that there might have been some repurposing from time to time. I could think that, for example, in finance, we had some positions that came to us from the recalibration, and
and the folks did such a bang-up job that we were able to use them in other areas. So I'll have that in our report.
And I guess, how do you determine, Fred, when you're doing this, whether it's a change that requires a budgetary process where you go to the legislature and ask for a recharacterization of the employee versus an administrative process where you simply go in and modify it through a general expense modification through the auditor's office? I mean, do you treat it that you can move any employee under a GEM?
Go ahead, Greg.
No, sir. The GEM would only move the expenditures related to that employee. Normally, in preparing, in past years, when we prepare our budgets, if a position, if a D-1, which for benefit of the new committee members,
right.
The D-1 is the amount that's listed for each budget unit for the salaries and the benefits of the positions that are in that budget. So you have position numbers, salaries, benefits, all listed under this D-1. And it relates to the 100 series in your budget. And so if there had been changes in alignment in years past, we would work with the budget office to make net to zero changes in the budget. This year, we couldn't make net to zero changes because there's a footnote in our budget that requires us to do a B-11. So we went to the B-11 process.
Well, what I'm trying to get you to explain to me is that suppose the legislature decides to create a special ed program and has 5 employees, and then midway through the year you said, well, we'd like to move 3 of those over to distance learning or something like that, and are you using the GEM process to move those employees after we leave?
Right.
Madam Chair, we're not. Again, the GEM process, to my knowledge, is only for the expenditures.
Well, that's what I don't understand. I mean, are you saying, okay, we'll create new positions here, but we'll move the expenditures out of another code?
Madam Chair, I see your question, and let me think through it for just a moment.
Madam Chair, this is Cindy. Thank you. My understanding is that when I first entered office, that there had been 9 had already made changes when I came in November, and that this process has been occurring. And my understanding is, again, that this process occurs because federal law perhaps has changes, and as well as state statute. When we look at the accountability bill, there are requirements within that accountability bill that are now in statute that the department is to fulfill. And so some of the duties and requirements of the staff then have to respond to that. And that's how I understand it's been going on for not just the former administration, but for administrations prior to that, many administrations prior to that. Is that correct, Mr. Hansen?
Madam Chair, that's very good explanation.
Well, but last year when we were here, we said, look, do your position realignments, come in, and I think you had 9 positions that you did. And the idea was, let's get them all realigned so we know where the positions are. And so that was, let's get it straightened up. Alignments came in. Are we now saying that there were, beyond the 9 or so that were realigned last year, there are another 28 positions that need to be realigned again?
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead, Superintendent.
Mr. Co-Chairman, my understanding is that I do remember that, and it wasn't 9 at that time. The number that we're looking at right now, when that period ended, that we were to freeze those, if you will, we did so. We followed exactly what you told us to do, and we followed A&I's recommendations, and that's what Mr. Hansen had just spoken to you about. And then that went on to the governor, and then he denied that, and we went back to what we had in the beginning. But we had intended to, one by one by one, if I'm correct, Mr. Hansen, address each one of these D-1 issues, again, which had been happening for many administrations, kind of cleaning house, if you will, and I'm glad to have done it. But then we were asked to put it into one large group, which was, again, I think there's 28 or 29 of them. And we did so, put that in a B-11, as you know, sent it to the governor, and again, came back and were asked to repopulate, if you will.
So, Superintendent, do I understand then what you're saying is that as a consequence to legislation that was filed, the department then determines that to meet the statutory requirements that you would move positions from one unit to another unit to meet that's what you think are the statutory load requirements?
Madam Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, it's my understanding when I was entering that this had been the practice for many administrations of the Department of Education. As you know, the direction from this body was to clarify through the D1, which now is part of our process, even as we're hiring, to ensure that those duties are clear before someone is ever hired or repurposed, if you will. But that was not the prior practice before me coming in, and I will tell you it is now the practice.
And I don't know what the old practice is and the new practice. What I'm trying to understand is I would think that if we did a bill that has accountability and it would have a fiscal note in positions, what I'm asking is simply, the department determined that the fiscal note was insufficient, or they determined to realign positions to meet it? And if so, how can we track it? Can you tell us what positions were realigned?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, it's always the case when there's a bill and there's no positions attached to the bill, and we say that we can do it with existing staff, then we always realign existing staff.
That's fine. Now, how are you going to be able to provide us a sheet that shows which positions were realigned and where they came from and where they went to?
Again, we can do it from a broad overview, as Senator Beebout suggested, or we can really give you a detailed sheet,
and I would
too.
Just like to add to this, Mr. Co-Chairman. On last year on January 12th, and we have 20 positions here that was really the start of this discussion, I believe. And I'm just trying to figure out how I would reconcile to make certain that those moves took place, and we had the appropriation, and then you did the GEM process to get the revenue for the expenditure. Do they reconcile with these pages that are on 7 and 8 of these positions, that they definitely were, the job description was defined? I forget the word that you just used or the term for that. What's that called, the movement term that you use?
Madam Chair, I'd have to go back and look at that document.
Okay, it's dated January 12th, and so what I've recognized in it, there are 20 positions. I can find the unit numbers, and I can find the position numbers, and I can find several of them on the sheets that are now in our supplemental budget. So I'm just trying to figure out how many of those have been reconciled with ANI and with the governor's office in this B11 process. Because we worked on that through the whole session.
Madam Chair, my memory is vague on the January 12th. Wasn't that the analysis that the LSO staff did on just the funding? It wasn't moving positions. It was realigning the funding was what I thought you were talking about. I wasn't aware that we moved any positions other than at the beginning of the budget process when we did our net to zero changes.
Mr. Jones, would you like to step in?
Madam Chair, in our review of the information, there were movements of positions between units, and we've identified 6 positions that changed units and funding was adjusted that are also included in the supplemental request here in the agency's proposed budget. Just to reemphasize, I think everyone's clear on this, but basically the supplemental request that's included in here for the realignment of positions mirrors what was on the B11 that was before the governor and that he ultimately denied. So when the agency came to us and asked us to do the realignment and do it through the B11 process, we directed them to ultimately submit a supplemental request for legislative approval because of the magnitude of what was being proposed.
I guess,
go ahead.
Brett, we're going to need your help in sorting it out. I mean, let's take, for example, DEQ. And suppose they've got 10 positions in permitting, 10 positions in regulations, and essentially going out and enforcing enforcement activities on property. So then a bill is brought through, and Senator Bebow, for example, says, well, I want to increase the number of employees or the amount of funding going to permitting. I want to get permitting up. And if the agency says, well, okay, we'll do that, but we'll do it within our existing employee pool. If that came to JAC, we would say, well, wait a minute. Every position that was in the enforcement, if there's 10 positions, they might have been put in there because Representative Stewart put them in there because they create a program. So if you want to move two positions from here to here, you would have to have a budgetary approval. If you don't get it, then the assumption is that the 10 positions that were already assigned to permitting would get the job done. But you wouldn't take it out of one unit or one program and put it into another unit because that has to have a starvation effect on the unit that just got deprived. So we would always do an assessment of, well, if you're moving a position from one unit to another, we want to know what the unit was, how the positions got there. If they weren't needed, we'd be cutting positions. So what I can't tell is what's happening. I mean, I give you an example. What I don't know is what's happening here. I mean, Fred, I can't tell if you say, well, you created new load obligations by the bill, and we're going to go take special ed people and put them in here. There's a lot of people that would say, no, we don't want to do that. So we should be part of that prioritization, and there should be a budget authorization to allow that to happen in advance. Would you disagree with that? Or,
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, in a way I do disagree with it, because our practices in the past, which I think are standard across state agencies, is that as the agency prepares its budget, it moves the D-1s around to reflect how the employees are working, so that when you get the budget in December and you review it, you see how many folks are working in each unit, and you raise your questions then. Is that enough? Do you have enough in special ed, for example? So you wouldn't have seen the movement, but you would see the end result of it, that there's now this many in special ed and this fewer in the other one.
Well, let me ask Brett, is that the practice followed by any other agencies?
Mr. Jones.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if this will directly answer your question or not, Mr. Chairman, but when we were looking at the B-11, and if you look at the language in terms of what we incorporated into the B-11 for narrative, as a means of providing some background for the governor on our recommendation. Really, in my opinion, I think where you're at this point in time is where the breakdown occurs. And it's a reconciliation of how the agency is approaching its mission and the various programs it's charged with executing. And the connection between that programmatic side of the equation with the fiscal side. And when there are significant changes on the programmatic side and that impacts duties assigned to individual positions, it has a corresponding impact on the fiscal side and how that agency is funded, especially when you're talking about various federal revenue streams that come into an agency. I can tell you from my perspective, I assume when legislation is passed and additional requirements are placed on an agency, additional workload, and it's absorbed within an agency, there are certain adjustments, but I believe there's a sensitivity in general terms to how that position and its JCQ, its job description essentially, with respect to how that work is done. I assume an agency looks at that charge those additional duties and says, here are the number of staff I have working in that area at this point in time, and can they absorb certain elements of what the legislature is telling us we need to execute? So, and if not, I would agree with you that if there's additional bodies needed in that area, that typically it would be addressed in a fiscal note or in a dialogue with the legislature about funding need, position need in relation to that workload. But when a disconnect is created and there's not a sensitivity perhaps to job description or historically what those positions have been outlined to do and the connection to that funding, I would suggest to you it gets confusing pretty quickly. And to make matters worse, in this particular agency, there are positions that are funded. There are a number of positions funded with a variety of sources. So you might see a position that's split funded with school foundation and federal funds, or split funded with general funds and school foundation funds. And when so there's even greater sensitivity in the Department of Education than you typically see in other agencies, or at least a number of other agencies. They would not be the sole agency in this particular area. I would imagine the Department of Health has some of these issues, and DFS, I know, has some of these issues. So I don't know if that answers your question, but where this broke down for us, Mr. Chairman, was exactly where you're at right now, understanding programmatically how these positions are being assigned to address the mission in front of the agency, and that connection, the sensitivity of that connection to how these positions are funded.
Let's take the Attorney General's office. Suppose we have five positions in the criminal division, five in the civil division, and a legislator says, I want the Attorney General to provide briefing for all county attorneys. And there's no fiscal note. The assumption is it has to be performed by the criminal attorney loads. We assign tasks to the criminal division that there's no way they can get all the work. So they prioritize within their criminal division. But that would not be an authorization to take the civil attorneys and move them over into the criminal. So oftentimes we give more workload to an agency they can perform, and we govern the amount of resources to that by aligning the number of positions, and if you just don't get the work done, you don't get the work done. But if you went and said, okay, I'm going to take civil lawyers and move it over there, well, now the civil area is deprived, and that should
Madam
be
Chair.
A legislative effort. Go ahead.
One moment,
I'm just trying to – but what we do know is what the practice, as I understand, Fred, is that you assign workload throughout the year, and then every time you go through the Chapter 17 process, you realign functions as a matter of how the department has realigned responsibilities through the year. Is that
Mr.
what you're telling us?
Yeah, Mr. Hansen and then Superintendent Hill.
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, you're absolutely correct. When we do the D1 changes, the net to zero D1 changes, to align the positions to the proper budget, it's documented for you through the Chapter 17 process. So that's correct.
Superintendent Hill?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I appreciate the comparison with health and DFS because I am aware that they have some of these challenges. Again, we're service-oriented agencies, and one of the challenges is to deliver, as the good senator just said, if you don't get the work done, you don't get it done. In our case, that's not an option. And in order to respond to all that's being asked of us and also maintain fiscal responsibility, we've had some challenges. This is not a new challenge, though. It's a historical challenge. And the Department of Ed, being one of the largest agencies and handles the largest budget in state government, I see us as a very fluid agency. Now, we've spoken of special ed this morning, and I would say that special ed is one of those areas that we would never take any services from special education. The work must be done. We're going to complete the work. We have to complete the work. When we look at how many secretaries we have in the department, and what we may do is say we can repurpose and complete more work and accountability, which may indeed be administrative. And we have done those things. And again, with fiscal responsibility in mind. But when we have work to do, we must complete it. We serve children, so we don't have that option. So I would say what the work here is, and I guess the process is, all who are involved, and we're talking not just the department, but A&I, HRD, the governor's office, and WDE are trying to ensure that these processes are understood and that they reflect everyday practices that actually benefit kids. So this is a little bit more challenging than maybe some agencies that have been mentioned here today.
Thank you. And Senator Meyer, you still have a question?
Madam Chairman, I guess I look at some of the other agencies, and we did have the AG's office in here the other day, and they did request that their water division be funded under general fund so they would have the flexibility to do to change their workload if they didn't have water cases in front of them. And I think that, you know, I just can't imagine if we would have the AG's office have to ask the governor for a mother, may I work on this case or that case, even though it's not within my division. And I'm trying to figure out why government is necessarily so inefficient. And I think part of it is just what we're going through here. I can't imagine running my business the way you guys are running your business. Think of a grease monkey. If you're having your oil changed and the guy that puts on the wiper blades doesn't show up for work, and the oil guy, you'd have to call corporate to get a permission to have him put on wiper blades. You'd never get the car out of the shop. And I think that really we need to look at whether or not the job is getting done, and have some accountability as to where the money's being spent. But you're going to have these fluctuations as people move in and out of a department, as the workforce changes. We had, I think, 1,500 retirees last year. So there's a lot of people moving in and out of government, and you're just going to have you're going to have a need to have flexibility into moving people in between their duties. And I don't know how much detail we need to make decisions. But time and time again, we'll put duties on different agencies without putting people in there. And a lot of it is because I think agencies just ask for five people and they expect maybe they'll get one when they do their fiscal note. But I'm guess how much my question with all this diatribe is how much time does it take and how many extra people does it take to necessitate that to necessitate the accountability that we're looking at. And, Fred, this probably goes to your shop. I mean, I don't know how many people you have in there, but how much time did you have to put forward as far as man hours just to do the minutia?
Go ahead. Madam Chairman, if I might speak for a moment. My staff have been working tirelessly, and they've added significant responsibilities on to just this. However, the other work is being accomplished as well. And so I want to recognize that of my staff. And I again want to say this is historical. So if we can solve this, so as we move forward, we can recognize how fluid we do need to be without having extra bureaucratic requirements on my staff, I would very much appreciate it, because the work is arduous as it is without this additional bureaucracy. Thank you.
Mr. Hansen?
Madam Chair, Senator Meyer, was your question how much time did I personally spend on accountability over the summer, over this year?
Well, I mean, in general, in trying to make sure that everything matches up and you've got all your job descriptions and everybody's in the right little cubicle, and I'm guessing it, you know, we give the governor a 5 or 10% flex, you know, I guess, in his budget. I'm wondering about a policy that would give you a 5 or 10% flex as far as having, I guess, what I'd call it a utility position or something, or people that could go from, you know, that were cross-trained, that you could put them in
any category without having the problems that you have with the funding, maybe utility positions within funding areas. I'm not sure how to describe that.
Mr. Hansen?
Madam Chair, Senator Maher, if we had a 10% flex, that's 15 people. We're a 150-man agency. So we do. In particular, the accountability bill is an excellent example. That was a bill that was given $250,000 to the State Board of Education and $250,000 to the Department of Education. It was later determined that the $250,000 for the department should go to the State Board. So the State Board got $500,000. So we had to do all of the accountability work from all the coordination, building the model, gathering the data. We did with the existing staff. And to further elaborate what Senator Nicholas was asking about, for example, if I did a lot of work on the accountability and it was charged to finance, because that's where my pay comes from. The fellow that did the model was charged to data tech, his budget. So we probably need more than 10% flexibility, though.
So, you know, Mr. Hansen, part of the discussion, I think, stems back to, you know, last year when we were working or became aware of the teacher-to-teacher program, which Superintendent Hill, he thought was a terrific program. But it wasn't a program that we as the legislature had recognized or directed the Department of Education to do. But you saw, if I remember this correctly, that this was a program that you thought was beneficial in retooling your educators or giving them additional leadership training on the ground. And so that's when we started having, I believe, this discussion about redirecting or repurposing funds for a program that you saw that as a superintendent that this was a program you wanted to implement and put funding with. And so you redirected it. You assessed your budget, and you said, okay, I can move this funding to do this program. And that's when we started this discussion on the number of employees and where the funding was and how we align it. So I'm just – am I correct about that?
Madam Chairman, as I recall, and this may be what some remember, and if you don't, then correct me in your recollection, but the Laramie office was in part funded by professional development funds, and as you remember, that office, I moved them back home so that we could limit the fragmentation that was going on in the department. When I look back, and I'm going to take us back a few steps further, we had a Pearson settlement agreement. And during that Pearson settlement agreement that former Governor Friedenthal and Superintendent McBride handed off to Governor Mead and I, there was nearly $2.7 million in professional development that Pearson had been, that they'd negotiated with the former governor and superintendent. When I came in, I looked at that professional development and I said, I'm not certain that that's what's needed. I wanted to know more. I put out a survey to the teachers and the educators in Wyoming. We had approximately 1,200 who responded. And they said, we do want the professional development, which is what we provide at the Department of Education. And we had those in our budgets. Several budgets reflect professional development. But they said we didn't want it from Pearson. We wanted it from the state. And so I spoke with the Attorney General and let him know that's where we'd be going. We went in, negotiated. That was with a team of John Masters and John Shumway and I and Pearson. When we walked out of that room, we had the $2.7 million coming back to the state. It didn't actually come in cash because former administrations had passed along the debt of assessment from one administration to another. This will be the first administration where the debt will be ultimately paid, if you will. I will not be passing it on to another administration in assessment. But nevertheless, what happened was we came back to the table and I said, okay, the professional development will not be provided by Pearson for $2.7 million. And I looked to our instructional leader, Cheryl Lane, responsible for student learning, and she went out into where we have a lot of data. We knew where the results were, and we asked those teachers if they were willing to work with other teachers on Friday nights and Saturdays with the best practices. And they devised what we said was a teacher-to-teacher initiative. It's not a program. You won't be able to find that in the United States or pull it off a shelf. It's called an initiative. It's where teachers who have the best practices work alongside other teachers. And so we did that for approximately $180,000. And what happened there was we thought approximately 200 teachers would come out because it was on Friday nights and Saturdays. Instead of pulling them out of the classroom, we asked them not to leave their classrooms. And what happened was over 2,000 have been trained. Now let me just take you to the step forward. We had the State Board of Education, where I sit as a member, adopted the Common Core Standards recently. And what happened there, we have professional development that we at the department are responsible for. So, again, through the teacher-to-teacher initiative, we've been working with districts throughout the state on the Common Core Standards. They rolled out this spring with mathematics and then with language arts. That will continue. The department is responsible for professional development. It's part of our duties. You will see that throughout our work. So that was not new. I think it was new to you all, because I don't think the department has been as active in instruction. We've become more focused on compliance, and we still do that. That's important work, and we still do it. But we also have an instructional focus. If you speak to any of our staff, whether you're in finance or you're in data or you're in assessment, we have an assessment director who's in the room today. We looked for her for 15 months. We brought in the former NAPA director so that he could be there for 15 months until we found the right person, and she's focused on instruction. So, yes, we do accountability, instruction, and compliance at the department. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
You're welcome. Senator Meyer.
So the Pearson dollars, those were those general fund or foundation dollars, and it was $2.7 million?
Yearly. Madam Chairman, it was 2.68 and some other change.
Was that
general?
Foundation or general fund?
Mr. Hansen?
Madam Chairman, they were 75%, in rough terms, they were 75% school foundation, 25% federal in round numbers.
Okay, so, and we spent about 200,000 of those. Was that a biennium number or 2.7 or 2.68 million?
Right.
Madam Chair, the 2.6 was a reduction to our contract that we didn't spend it at all. So the contract went from a beginning original amount of almost $40 million. By the time all the amendments were processed, it came down to slightly over $30 million. And it was over a time period from December of 2008 through December of 2012.
And that's the funding mechanism, or the funds that you're using for the teacher-to-teacher. You're not using any funds out of assessment or anyplace else?
Mr. Hansen.
Madam Chair, Senator Meyer, the T-to-T last time was used from professional development budgets, from other budgets, not from this assessment budget. And there is no T-to-T program. The legislature approved $280,000 in the binding we're in right now today for T-to-T. However, as you'll see on my recap sheet, it's one of the ETA budgets. So
let me ask you, where did the legislature approve the T2T? The T2T, you show that on your budget sheet for 280. Where do you find that approval?
Mr. Co-Chair, I believe the legislature made that a motion back in January when you went through our budget. Because
there was a footnote 3 that was eliminated. That was eliminated in the budget, so that there was a draft bill. But I went back through the budget bill. I don't see any authorization creating a T2T program in the final signed budget.
And Madam Chairman,
go
if
ahead,
I might.
And then I'll go to Mr. Jones.
The really important information here is it's in an ETA and it has not been touched. So the professional development that the department does and continues to do and has done prior to me coming in has come from other budgets where professional development is part of the description. So it's a very integrated approach, which actually follows how we do business, which is very integrated in the department. We have been siloed and fractioned, but the integration has been important to us.
Mr. Chairman,
Madam Chair.
The general budget bills, I recall, said that T2T funds, the program would not be used, the funds would be moved to accountability. Is that your recollection?
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, yes, we moved the remaining T2T funds from the 11-12 biennium into the ETA account.
Okay, and then I think part of that original language said, that did not get adopted, look, if you want to do this program, take it to the Joint Education Committee, present it, and have them make a recommendation. Now, that was eliminated, but we had the discussion, if you want to start a new program, go to JEC and get their authorization.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, I believe your motion was to move $280,000 out of another budget, create the T2T, and report the expenditures after the first year to the Joint Education Committee. And so that's why A and I set up this separate budget. It was from a motion made here.
I'm going to go with Representative Wallace first, and then Stewart and Harshman. And if Mr. Jones needs to interject, raise your one. Okay, how about Mr. Jones first? Here we go.
Madam Chair, thank you. Just as a matter of clarification, the separate unit was created as a part of the appropriations process, but it was fairly early in the process as it came out of the Joint Appropriations Committee. There was a amendment on the Senate floor to eliminate the footnote related to the teacher-to-teacher program. That was done. When we created the version of the budget that actually ends up loading that we provide to the state auditor's office, mm-hmm. the breakout unit, 6107, was still in that load that we provided to them, and that was in error. Your staff contacted us when they noted it and talked to us about it, and then we had some dialogue with the department, and the agreement on the part of all three was that we would be the $280,000 that was left in 6107 to the ETA account at the state auditor's office, and that is what occurred.
Okay, good, Mr. Jones, because I went from unit 6106 to 6108 and was looking for 6107. So thank you for the clarification on that, EORC. Okay, Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And that's exactly the thing that I wanted to bring up, because I have in front of me the footnote that was passed by the legislature dealing with this, and it says any unexpended, unencumbered, unobligated amounts within this education school finance budget which have been designated by the agency for teacher-to-teacher programs, including any amounts appropriated for these purposes in this act, shall be transferred to the education testing and assessment account created under Section 2. So that has happened or that has not happened?
Mr. Jones?
Madam Chairman, Representative Wallace, we did be 11 in excess of $2 million from 11 and 12 accounts identified as restricted within the footnotes in the appropriations bill to the ETA account in the state auditor's office. There are a number of additional moving parts. For example, we're working with the agency to then B11 any encumbrances they release from those units for 11 and 12, so that is an ongoing effort as well. And I lost my train of thought. There's another item I need to point out to you, but I don't remember what it is off the top of my head. I apologize.
I'll let you raise your hand again.
So, Madam Chairman?
Go ahead.
So the answer is yes, that occurred. And thank you. And again, you all appropriated approximately $500,000, $250,000 originally during the last session to the state board. We, through reading the statute, thought $250,000 was coming to the Wyoming Department of Ed for accountability. The AG, we had an informal opinion, I believe. Maybe it was a formal one. I don't know. Nevertheless, it agreed with the actual interpretation that we had read just by textually reading the legislation, but the co-chairs of the Joint Education Committee told us their interpretation was that was to go to the state board. So again, we've been moving forward without any legislative funds from last session. And I understand that, given that we have 8% budgets and the fiscal restraint that we're looking at. But I'm looking to you to understand that we're trying to move an agency forward with Common Core standards, new assessments, a lot of expectations in education, and taking 8% cuts without hesitation, and also not asking for a supplemental budget. But we have processes that date back to when we had Harcourt and Judy Catchpole's administration that have passed along a debt in assessment. So, for instance, when this debt, I learned of it, I think it was nearly $6 million when I walked in. I thought, how can I be in debt $6 million walking into the agency? I could ask Greg Hansen to come before you and show you what that looks like. And we can show you how it's passed from one vendor and one administration to another, but I can guarantee you that won't be going forward.
Thank you, Superintendent. Mr. Jones, and then Representative Stewart.
Madam Chairman, my memory has returned.
Good.
There's one other item associated with the teacher-to-teacher program, and that is in the footnote language that was adopted by the legislature for this agency, it directed that the Department of Audit perform an audit associated with 11 and 12 funds in relation to that program. And that audit was completed, I believe, towards the end of August. The department responded to the findings in that audit. There has not been any follow-up action on that audit with respect to its findings or with respect to recommendations from the superintendent. With regards to the, I'm not sure this is the proper term, but the repayment of dollars identified as, I'm not sure this is the right word either, but inappropriate spending that occurred. And I don't remember the exact amounts. I actually have the audit loaded here along with the response letter from the department. But that's a remaining piece out there that remains unresolved in terms of the Department of Audit's findings related to teacher-to-teacher and suggestions, or at least their findings, that may lead to suggestions for potential repayment or additional flows into the ETA account that's in the auditor's office.
Okay, good.
Madam Chairman.
Thank you. And if you'll get that figure for us when we take our break, that would be great. All right, Superintendent Hill.
I would like to clarify the term he used. He used that word inappropriate, and actually the word was questionable because the narratives and the statutes, we had followed the narratives and the statutes. So the word was questionable, and I think it was like, and Fred, Mr. Hansen, it was 0.00 something of a budget of nearly $21 million where we went through a 99.5% analysis, which is means to me that you look at almost every single transaction in that nearly $20 million, and we had very few questionable where we didn't always agree, but necessarily it was within the narrative or the statute.
Let me ask you, Madam Chairman.
Go ahead.
Fred, in order to meet the obligation of that footnote, which required that all the funds be restored to those codes, were you required to use the GEM process to move funds in from other accounts?
Mr. Hansen.
Madam Chair, the audit found all of our expenditures to be appropriate expenditures. We did not have to restore anything. What the audit ended up saying is that, okay, we question this, we question that, we question the other thing as being related to education testing assessment. Superintendent Hill said, that's fine. We have over $1 million in reversions in those areas, and we volunteer up three other budgets. That's our recommendation to you, to take the three questionable items and move them to ETA also.
Well, I'm not quite. We had, I think, vouchers that showed that the T2T program was paid out of some of those codes. So in order to come up at the end, I assume you had to restore those monies from another source. Was that correct?
Mr. Chairman, or Mrs.
Superintendent Hill.
Madam Chairman, they may have come out of those codes, but within those codes is professional development. And so, and the auditors can speak to this. We had followed the narrative in every single budget and code. And so that was not misappropriated. It was maybe questionable as to maybe it should have come out of a different unit, but we had reversions in almost every one of our units, so it didn't really matter to us which one you took it out of. We were sending back money as it was. So if you chose a different unit, that would be fine with us, but there was no money to necessarily be paying back because it was not inappropriate. It was just questioned as to which one.
Mr. Jones and then Representative Stewart. Go ahead.
I apologize, Representative Stewart. I am looking at that. The term that was used by the Department of Audit is questioned, is the terminology that was used within the context of the audit. In Unit 6104, there is $36,706 in questioned payroll. Additionally, there's another $97,628 in questioned expenses, assessment and testing expenses, and the units that are affected by that are 6104, 6105, 6130, 6174, and 4603.
Thank you, Mr. Jones, for following up. Okay. Representative Stewart. Do you remember your question?
We'll work through it, Madam Chair, and thank you, Madam Chair. For my first question, Fred, looking back in the budget book, on page 6, you list 20-plus positions that you want to move. And then on the following pages, 7 through 9, I see a listing of 70-plus positions. Now, could you explain to us, tell us, just how many positions are being affected with your supplemental request, please, for my first question?
Mr. Hansen.
Madam Chair, thank you. I thought the number was something like 28, 29. I'm not sure. My recollection, it's been a long time since I looked at page 7 and 8, and frankly, I'm not prepared to give a firm answer on that. I know what we were looking at.
That's okay, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, for my next question then, again, I'm trying to get a perspective, Madam Chair, because the level of scrutiny that we have been giving this department is sometimes beyond my pay scale. But to put this into perspective, and I'm glad, Fred, you brought up, you have a total of 150 positions. And again, I looked, again, we mentioned Department of Health, which has 1,500 positions. Now, are we witnessing an effort on your department to align your positions, recognizing maybe you came in with some problems and you're trying to correct some problems, or do we have a systemic problem in our agencies that we should be or seeing more, and perhaps Brett could address this as well, that you know, from where I sit, what's going on here? Should we be witnessing almost a 20% realignment in Department of Health, which would several hundred positions? Is that going on? Or just, Madam Chair, I need some help with this.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Hansen?
I'm going to go first.
Okay, Superintendent Hill.
I think both are true. My understanding, and again, I'm pretty new to the scene, but from my conversations with others, is that this is not unusual. Not only is it historical in this agency, but it's in state government. So I can only go by what people share with me. I haven't lived in those other agencies. I don't really know, but that's my understanding. And then the second part is we are in need always, and this is historical too, in alignment with what, again, the feds are making changes right now. We're going to speak to perhaps sequestering, or sequestration, excuse me, this morning. There are changes going on at the federal level continually, and even, can you imagine, at the state level? especially in education right now, correct? And so we have to be responsive, and we are, and I think the department continues to be. So I think both are true, and I don't think either one are new. But I think maybe you saw it maybe more so with this particular administration and the responsiveness.
Madam Chair, perhaps Brett could address my question as with respect to Department of Health and what we're witnessing within that department. To put this into perspective, are we seeing a 10-15% shifting, moving of positions within that agency that we have not been scrutinizing to the extent that we have been with this 005?
Madam Chair, Reverend Stewart, I don't know about health or DEF.
I was asking Brett.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Jones.
I heard Fred instead of Brett.
That's okay. Sorry.
Madam Chair, Representative Stewart, I would tell you I do not, while I believe this may occur in other agencies with a few positions, in other words, the agency may get ahead of reclassification processes or so forth due to the urgency of what it is trying to accomplish. I don't believe it happens extensively or as extensively as this in other agencies. You may recall in the 13-14 biennial budget, you actually saw a request from the Department of Health to make several position adjustments. And so in their particular case, I think where they acknowledge it, they come before the JAC and ultimately the legislature seeking approval to make those adjustments. I'm not going to tell you, however, that there aren't perhaps cases of this that occur in other agencies, but I'm fairly confident it does not occur to the extent that it has occurred here. The other place I would tell you is that obviously, and I think this is an anomaly, when you look at ETS in terms of the transition that they're going through presently, they're trying to keep up with all of the processes that they have to go through in terms of reassignment for new people, going through the JCQ process, looking at how the funding fits in that regard. But I consider them a little bit different because they're obviously an agency in transition. But I guess the short answer is I don't believe it occurs as extensively in other agencies as we are seeing it here.
So then for my last question, Madam Chair, back to you, Fred or Cindy, then again, give us a good overview for why you have a higher percentage need to bring this to such scrutiny within this committee. Thank you.
Madam Chairman, thank you. And perhaps Representative Edmonds and Senator Nichols will remember, I invited legislators, or I began by speaking with the two of them, in June of 2011, right after I came into office. I gathered my staff, and I said, we need to look at what we're doing in our budgets. And not just a quick overview, but I looked at line by line. And then I spoke to both of the legislators and said, I'd like to have you come in August so you know what's going on and what we're imagining. And I found out, and thank you for guiding me, because you know I'm learning, that I was usurping the legislative process. And so we didn't have the legislators come in. But I want you to know I believe in total transparency here. Let me give you an example of what occurred in my first days in office. I was in a transition period, and I realized during that transition period that we had a lot of fragmentation and also that we were very much compliance-oriented. And we had accountability that was coming if it wasn't already there, and also that professional development piece, that instructional piece. So I looked at the agency, and so I didn't have an HR person. She was out. She was sick. She had surgery. And I didn't have leadership with me yet. So I repurposed the deputy and two director positions that were vacant. There are 9 directors and a deputy. And I said, okay, I think that we should have 3 instructional leaders, and we need one for learning, one for accountability, and one who will handle the operations and the compliance piece. And so working with the HR director, Dean Fawcett, I negotiated that with him with his help, and we did that. We saved about $45,000. because those positions were higher paid than the three instructional leaders that I put together. And then we began. And that was the beginning of not only looking at the compliance piece, which we continue to do and are required to do by statute, federal and state, but then we had that accountability piece coming, which we all believe in. And so I needed someone who would lead that. And then there was another piece, which was learning, which has always been there, but maybe not as focused upon as we needed it to be in Wyoming. Maybe that's why we're looking at accountability. So, and then I began looking for the people who would serve in those positions. And then our staff began finding their way as to how do we fit in all of these things. There's that accountability piece, which whether you're in finance or, again, you're in data or you're in assessment or you're in my standards division, and I still do have six divisions, or you're in learning. And, by the way, all of them participate in learning. You'll see them out. We're working with the teachers. And then there's that accountability piece, which we've been talking about, which is critical to all of us. So that's why it is being reconfigured. But the work doesn't change. Fred Hansen and his team continue to do amazing work. And the assessment division continue to do amazing work. By the way, it wasn't working over in Laramie. I figured that out really quickly. And I could give examples as to why that wasn't working. But we're all now, actually, most of us are on the second floor, with the exception of my outreach folks in special ed in Fremont County. Did that answer your question, Representative Stewart? So there is a transition that took place on how we focus in the department and how we organize ourselves. We're very much focused and mission-oriented.
Well, I guess what I'm searching for is that perhaps you're trying to accomplish something within your agency that maybe other agencies are not. And perhaps that could be occurring. But then, of course, I think part of the scrutiny that is being brought to bear within these discussions is because of, the inability to answer a very simple question that I asked to begin the discussion with. That, what is it? You know, how many positions are we talking about? Is it 20 plus or 70? I mean, that's a significant number. Whether it's half of your staff or a smaller percentage. So thank you.
Madam Chairman,
sure.
When I walked in, there were 9. And you all have identified 28. We said it was 29. If that's the answer you're looking for, that's the answer to your question.
Mr. Hansen, and then...
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Harshman, you're fine? For the moment? Okay, and once you respond to this, we're going to take a 10-minute break and be back at it.
Madam Chairman, with your permission, I'd like for Greg Hansen to answer Representative Stewart's question about the number and explain what he's seen on pages 6 and 7.
Oh, that would be great. Sure. Right. Mr. Hansen?
Yeah. Madam Co-Chair?
If you can pull the mic a little bit closer to you, Greg.
Sorry.
And we're on page 7?
Yes.
Great.
On page 7, where the good representative has recognized that there's about 70 lines, what that shows is the position moving out of the negative number shows the position moving out of that unit. The positive number shows the position moving into that unit. So it shows there's 29 total positions, and the counting on page 7 and 8 shows where the position is moving from, where it is moving to, the type of fund that pays that position, and then the net effect that rolls into the supplemental request. So it is 29 positions.
29 positions. And just to go over this, let's take the last page on 9 and give us an example. Let's just take the bottom one where there is the negative, 6372.
Okay. This is...
Tell us how... walk us through it.
Okay. 6372 has a negative for position number 106. That position, 1 year of that position's D1 funding is $72,000. So you've got to follow the position column up, about halfway up the page, and you'll see that a portion of position 106 is moving to 6315.
Yep.
So that's where it's going into. And then as we flip back to page 8, unit 6308 has position 106 again for $21,000. This is a position that is split funded based on timesheets. So that it, that's why the amounts are different in between there.
Okay.
And our good friends at A&I were the ones that actually prepared this table, so I'm probably not doing it justice.
Okay.
But that's the general idea of this table.
Representative Stewart, would you like to ask a question now in regards to this?
This is good, bringing a little clarity, but of course, Madam Chair, I still go back to just trying to get an overview, the perspective of this. I mean, I do remember Department of Health, we're going through some major realignment there, reduction of employees, letting him move some things around. I don't see a 20% realignment commensurate amount level within that department with a significant readjustment there as I do with Department of Ed. So I'm still trying to put this into perspective. I mean, we'd be looking at 300 employees moving around in Department of Health that we're just not seeing with that effort. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Jones.
Madam Chair, it's probably fairly important that I also add a comment to my prior testimony on this issue, and that is there are defined processes for how this occurs, not only within the fiscal world, but also in the human resources world. They're very well-defined processes, and agencies are aware of requirements to revisit job descriptions and redefine job responsibilities. They're very formal processes, and this is a big part of what Human Resources Division does. It's a big part of what the Budget Division does. I mean, we're there to assist agencies in walking through this, but there's an awareness on the part of agencies that there are defined processes for going through what we're talking about.
Thank you. With no further questions, then we are going to take a 10-minute break, and I'd like everyone back here at 20 of 10, please. Well, I was trying to improve on the JAC 10 minutes, but that didn't work. It's all my fault, I guess. Anyway, do we have everyone back in the room? Certainly not my staff. They were waiting. Yes. There's Senator Meyer. Okay, great. All right, well, we're still on the movement of positions and working through the GEM process, the B11 process, and I think, Mr. Hansen, one of the things we wanted to still work on is back on the accountability piece, and as we, the legislature, directed that part of the legislation, what happened then with the B11 process and then your GEM process with those positions that you needed in order to fulfill the duties of accountability? Are they in there? And then how many of those positions were federal positions versus state positions, or did they have a split of duties? I noticed we worked through this. I've seen some of the general fund positions, the federal funds, how that broke up when you went through that process to supposedly realign all of your 29 positions.
Right. Madam Chair, with the accountability, I would have to – I could include that in our report, too.
Okay, great.
On that. My memory, I just don't trust of what the alignments were. It was but we will research that and get back.
Well, that would be good, because if that takes – whatever the group of folks for the accountability portion, where they stand – how much of that's being funded by the state side versus the federal side, and who those folks are.
Sir. Madam Chairman.
Mm-hmm. Superintendent Hill.
As an example, without giving a staff member's name, for instance, the accountability was on the federal level. So Title II professional development, Title I, those issues. We had a staff member who was dedicated to those duties, and then when the teacher evaluation piece for the state accountability system came to be, that became in part her responsibility because it actually was aligned with her work, but it could not be funded through federal dollars. So she became in part, she's one of those 29 who became partially funded then through general funds. Does that make sense?
Yes. I guess to follow up with that, though, I am curious about the job descriptions. I know you have a different title for it, but as you align these positions, you know, as we went through the process earlier, 3 years ago, going through all of state government and making realignments and looking at job descriptions and making those changes so that we could look at the comparisons with the private sector versus state government employees, where do you stand on those type of job descriptions, and how current are you on those now?
Madam Chairman, thank you. And we are current on our job descriptions. I want to confirm that.
Madam Chair, mm-hmm. Megan Harper, Human Resources Supervisor. And throughout the process of hiring, positions becoming vacant, and also currently we are in the process of updating any outdated JCQs. An outdated could just mean an outdated signature. I have some signatures of positions that come from 2010. And they may be from 2010 because nothing's changed. But we want to make sure that we're our positions are accurate. And I work with supervisors and division directors to make sure they still align with their classification code and, you know, how we're compensating them and how that's been determined.
So you're responsible for dealing with the split in the payments of their duties as far as being federal versus being state?
I am not responsible for that determination. That comes to me after a division director, when working with our instructional leaders or Superintendent Hill, they may come to me and say, we've made a change here and we want to make sure that our JCQ is aligned, and we'll work with you to do that.
And then with the federal portion, then they would be keeping a time log,
yes,
on that in order to make certain that they can back up their,
yes,
grant monies. Okay.
Exactly.
Other questions on this part? Representative Wallace, do you have a question?
I do, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
I have several. Superintendent Hill, would you please describe for the committee the split programs, both the one that's going on now and the one that's apparently scheduled for in the spring, and how they're set up and how it's funded and what it's intended to do, and just kind of take us through that so that we can understand what's going on there.
Madam Chair, Representative Wallace, and I would also ask that Christine Steele or whomever needs to come up to the table, this, and you're talking about this special ed literacy piece, training, yes, professional development. Would you like to come up, both Cheryl and Christine? And your question again, Representative Wallace, was how they're...
Madam Chairman, Superintendent Hill, my question is this. We're all very well aware of the long discussion that we had over the teacher-to-teacher program last year and the actions that the legislature took as a result of that. I think that I would be accurately representing the feeling of this body in saying that we felt like this was a entirely new program that had not received legislative authority, and that we felt that, and others may think differently, but my perception was, and my feeling certainly was, that we amply provide for teacher development at the local level. And as a result of that, when the need came up for more funds in order to handle the accountability piece, we made the decision and included in the budget bill the footnote that we talked about earlier today that transferred those funds over to the accountability piece. So basically, it looks like, to my untrained eye, that these split programs are, in fact, just teacher-to-teacher with a new name. And so I'm wondering how that was, when it was started, how it's funded, what the purposes are, if they're different from teacher-to-teacher, and if so, how that might be. And just kind of give us an overview so we can understand what's happening with those programs and how it's being implemented.
Superintendent Hill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Wallace. And so for clarification on terminology before we begin, a program is something that is tangible and you can actually take it off of a shelf or you can see it. Teacher to teacher is an initiative. What I mean by that, it's where teachers work alongside teachers. They might do it on Common Core regarding literacy, numeracy, critical thinking, but an initiative is how you actually, the methodology, if you will, rather than the content that you're working with. So, for instance, Reading First, for those who remember Reading First, that might be considered a program. Read 180 would be a program. These are things that are tangible. Teacher to teacher is a means of actually doing the work. It's the methodology. So it would be teachers working alongside teachers versus consultants and contractors coming in from the outside. Providing this work. So right now we do have teacher-to-teacher initiatives going on with Common Core, with numeracy. And when we speak of split, it has the Common Core numeracy and literacy focus. So there are teachers who are working with, and split is being special ed literacy. So they, when we were doing this prior to me, before the board adopted the Common Core, they were working on literacy and numeracy. And it was for special ed specifically, our special educators throughout the state. And it was provided by special educators from within our state, teachers. And it was on our state standards. Now, those state standards are Common Core state standards, which have been adopted in the last year or so. And so it continues. So you are correct in that it has, and that continuance. It was on the state standards before, and our state standards related to our assessment, because they're all very much entwined. And the Common Core, and are you familiar with the Common Core? Those are those standards that we adopted, June of 2000 and 11, I believe, and or maybe it was 12. I can't, 12, and so those now those standards are being implemented across our state. And you're right, there's a great deal of implementation that's going on locally, and there's implementation that's supported from the Wyoming Department of Education as well. We had a number of folks in our building yesterday morning, some from the northern part of the state, some from the northeast, and they were asking for our support in their implementation of the Common Core. And that is part of the department's work, again, through professional development. So whether it was implementing our standards, our former state standards, or the Common Core that are part of our state standards. Now, you wanted to know about the funding and how that worked. Is that correct? Okay. Christine Steele?
Madam Chairman. Mr. Co-Chair, I'm Christine Steele, and I'm the Instructional Leader for Operations. In our special ed funding, and in many of our federal programs, professional development is part of our technical assistance. And in the special education area, there's it's in the 6B program, 6B funding, there are funds set aside for what we call state-level activities. And state-level activities are to best benefit teachers of students with disabilities. Programs are trainings for specifically for those teachers. A SPLIT was a program or a training in which literacy was focused, and the audience was special education teachers or general education teachers that worked with inclusion special education students in the classrooms, or counselors that work with special education teachers. So the audience and the training and the focus of this initiative was a professional development for teachers of students with disabilities. And the content of it was the same as what we have been describing with our looking at the Common Core, looking at literacy, and how best to work with special education students in these areas. And so maybe, Cheryl, you could talk a little bit about what the content was.
Are there other, Madam Chair, I'm Cheryl Lane, yes. Instructional Leader with Learning. Are there other questions about I heard the answers. So are there other questions, or is it clear enough as to what was going on here? In other words, there has been training, and it's designated through our work at the state level to assist folks in the districts through professional development and technical assistance as prescribed by the guidance and the budget narratives to deliver support when it comes to changes, especially changes that have to do with assessment, state assessment, and state standards. And the vehicle to deliver that has been, as Superintendent Hill and my colleague has explained.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Looking at the stuff that you had on your webpage, it appears it's not just for special education teachers. It's for general education teachers, special education directors, school administrators, paraprofessionals, and it looks like anybody who shows up a warm body in the seat gets a $200 stipend from the state of Wyoming.
Ms. Lane?
I'm going to try to address that in sort of a global way. We're really aware through the new IDEA and through the response to intervention model that we're talking about at the federal level and at the state level, that when we talk about special education students, we're talking about students that belong to all of us in the school. That would include principals. That might include all kinds of folks, counselors, and so forth. And so we haven't been restrictive about who would come to hear about how best to deal with our students with disabilities, since the push is to consider a response to intervention at the all-student level, at intervention number 2 and intervention number 3 with the most needy students. So we see this as a really important piece to understand that all of us in buildings in the state of Wyoming are responsible for special ed students as well as general ed students. It's a huge push, for instance, to do what we call inclusion, and that would mean for least restrictive environment, that students have access to regular ed teachers with the support of their special ed folks in regular ed classrooms. Well, this does mean that regular ed teachers need to be really trained on what to do about vastly different students that might show up on your roster, how to differentiate for all of them. And so, yes, you'll find a wide array of people with a real good interest in special education who attend training.
Go ahead.
Is there who actually facilitates these events?
Ms. Lane.
Thank you. Chairman Berger, mm-hmm. Representative Wallace. This has been something that you might be able to visit with more through the special ed. I don't think Tiffany's in here, but who actually goes out on the road would perhaps include three or four members of the WDE Special Education Division, might attend a weekend and do a supporting role or do a major role in terms of delivering support out there. But the thought here is very much along the lines of sort of a general feeling that expert teachers are really important to talk with other teachers for that authenticity as to how instructional programs ought to look, how we ought to deal with this. And so it would vary. On one weekend, the key facilitator might be a gal from Douglas with 27 years of experience with at-risk kids. Or another weekend, it might be another gal with 20-odd years experience and lots of expertise as indicated by performance, who is a regular ed teacher in a certain middle school. So it's folks like that, and it isn't static.
Madam Chair, can I just, while we're on this, it relates to that. Who are, you mentioned some of those veterans. Who are they, I guess, and how much do they get paid? I mean, I'm looking at these 900 series. They're obviously getting paid then as vendors, I'm assuming. I mean, I see many names I know in the education community. Maybe tell us a few names and how much they get paid for each training. And are these currently employed educators, obviously? You said they're teachers.
Ms. Lane?
The question is, are these people under contract?
Well, it's under the using the vendor series 900.
I'm assuming yes, they're using the vendor yes. series. I'm mm-hmm. assuming because they're under contract in other districts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so who are some of them? I've got the list of names. We all have it. Can you, or do you want me to just go down the list of names?
You want to have a list? Just tell us.
I know them, but I'm just wondering. Are we going to name the names
Madam
of all?
Chair. For instance, Madam Chair, excuse me. Madam Chair.
Hold on, everyone.
Madam Chair.
Okay.
Let me refocus my question okay. so I can make it as clear as I can. You gave an example of a 27-year teacher in Douglas. So I would like to know who that is, and then I'd like to look at the vendor report and how much they're getting paid and from what budget and what code. And so that's really where I'm going with this. So if I could have an example.
Yeah, and we also for the record, we do have Agency 5 handout number 2 that has 16 pages of the 900 series.
I guess I see this, Madam Chair, and I don't want to – Representative Wallace has got the floor. I don't want to – she's got her line of questioning. There's lots of these $200 payments, so I'm assuming you're paying attendees who are the teachers that you talked about or – could be private school teachers, could be paraprofessionals, or as I read the flyer, anyone who's interested in attending, they become a vendor then of the state by completing a survey or something and then get professional ed credit, it looks like. So I'm assuming those aren't the presenters, the $200 ones. I'm assuming the presenters probably make a little more, and I guess I'd like to know a name and I can find it so I can look it up.
Madam Chairman, and then I'll defer to Instructional Leader Lane. This is Cindy, and I would just like to be very clear that you don't walk in and just get $200. That the people who are coming to these trainings, they're volunteering their time. There is, I believe, an exception for some of the special educators who come, but that is there is only an exception. We have trained thousands who have not been paid to be there on Friday nights and Saturdays. I want to be very, very clear about that. And the people who are preparing these trainings and working together and then going out as a collective teacher core, if you will, to work alongside their colleagues, they are paid as vendors, if you will. That's our system. But Cheryl, Ms. Lane, would you please share a little bit more perhaps on who does get paid or not, if I didn't clarify that enough?
And the $200 stipends start on page 13 of the report, 13 through 16.
Madam Chair, to clarify, in the area of special education, when teachers do extension work, not only attend approximately 10 to 12 hours of training on Friday night and Saturday, but also do extension work that evidences they've applied the lessons in their classrooms, that evidences that they've shared the work that they've learned on the weekend through their PLCs, which is their professional learning groups in their buildings, that they've done research, that they've collected some data around their student performance. When they've done that extension work that totals about 5 hours, we try to say between 5 and 7 hours of additional work, those people, and specifically in special ed, have been, if they choose to do that, have a $200 stipend. The great majority of teachers have not. Those folks that come forward have not been stipended at all. But I don't know for sure if you're talking about those participants who come in to take the training, and that's a $200 stipend that's given for specific and explicit work, not only for the weekend but beyond. Or if you're talking about the teachers who have joined in with the Department of Education to deliver the instruction. And those two have received a contract. And so, for example, Senator Harshman, Representative Harshman, you may be familiar with the name of, two different names. Sonia Leinbecki, I think her name is a special education teacher in your building. And she received a $200 stipend for extension work as a participant. In other words, to build the capacity for not only Sonia, but also those around her in special education at Natrona County High School, that they would then carry forward this good and valuable instruction to their buildings. And she's one of those who, as a participant, almost became, you know, a sort of, by extension, a teacher herself of other teachers. That was part of the requirement for the extension work. On the other hand, there's another type of contract, and that would be a teacher. Like you might know at Centennial Junior High, Lisa Smith. And Lisa isn't specifically working with special ed, but she is doing the Common Core rollout. And I'm just using those. My eyes landed on them. I know that you know those two folks. Now, Lisa is one who will stand and deliver instruction using best practice, exemplifying good teaching instruction for her 20, 40, 60, 200, however many participants come that weekend. And then she's paid a contract for that instruction. And she's a fine teacher from Natrona County High School.
Okay, thank you. And so as I look for Ms. Smith, where would she land in this dollar? I mean, it's sorted by dollars.
So do you want to know what a stipend looks like for a weekend of work?
Well, I'm just wondering what we've paid her since July 1st.
I don't know that. I don't know that, but I know how much a person who comes forward to teach on the weekend is paid, and that person's paid $500 for a weekend of work. And that includes, you know, their time traveling and prepping specifically for that event, whatever that might mean.
Okay. I'll go back to Representative Wallace, unless you have... You're hopping to another subject. I've got Representative Edmonds.
Just real quick on this $200 stipend. Then I see, some of these 600. I understand that you could go to one training and go to another training and earn another 200. Has there been folks who have attended multiples and have gotten multiple $200 stipends, two or three, maybe a $400 or $600 vendor payment?
Ms. Lane?
I would think that there wouldn't be three. There could be a very few number of folks in Wyoming who come to two different splits, as we've heard that term, special ed literacy training on the weekend. The first year, last spring, the focus was on the PAWS assessment and 3+8, the standards that were in place before the new Common Core. What does 3+8 signify? It's how we're measured on our reading test, on the state test. What does that look like? And so that the focus of last spring's split was that The focus this year is Common Core. Now, there's some common threads, but this year's training is Common Core. And this is pretty standard that a given venue might alter its focus of instruction. And whether or not we continue in the future with something like a special ed-oriented training really depends on the need as state assessment changes or as state standards change. But, yes, it would be possible. A handful of folks would come to one year and then the newer one the second year.
Thank you.
Representative Edmonds, is your question related to this topic?
Yeah.
So, Representative Wallace,
go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So, this is the first time that I've seen this, and I want to make sure I have my thinking correct. This split training has nothing to do with the teacher-to-teacher. You're not training anything that you used to train with teacher-to-teacher. This is a completely new, as you call it, initiative.
I just, again.
Ms. Lane?
Teacher, Madam Chair, co-chair. I just want to say this teacher-to-teacher moniker is really, well, it may be even unfortunate.
Ms.
Because
Lane,
what
I'm
it
asking the question.
Hold on.
It signifies really that are teachers joining up with us to deliver instruction on the weekend? Yes. And they did before, and they are yet.
Okay, Representative Edmonds.
Okay, that doesn't help me, though. I'm asking specifically about you came to us to appropriations. We discussed the teacher-to-teacher. We asked you to build a budget. Ultimately, the body, Senate and House, decided to remove that funding and to not go forward with the teacher-to-teacher. So what I'm asking specifically is this, does this have any remnants of teacher-to-teacher in it? Are you teaching the same thing? Is it the same kind of initiative? Or is this a different initiative?
Madam Chairman.
Superintendent Hill.
This is where they're similar. Literacy. It's a focus statewide, and it continues to be our focus. How do we work with districts? As Ms. Lane just said, teachers are joining us and teachers are working with other teachers. You can call that a PLC in a school, and some of them are using their work in their PLCs. Some of them are working on the weekends with others. And some of them are doing independent work after that. So those are the similarities.
So,
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess my follow-up is you knew. You understood that the body removed the teacher-to-teacher funding and, as a body, made the decision, the policy decision, that we didn't want teacher-to-teacher funded. Did you think maybe to, did you go before joint education and ask them about this initiative and say, should we roll forward with this? Are we going to run into the same problem we had with teacher-to-teacher? Because it was a contentious issue. And I'm troubled to see this again because I think it's going to be a contentious issue again.
Superintendent Hill.
Madam Chairman. When the State Board adopted the Common Core, we knew what our role was, and it continues to be regarding professional development and technical support to our districts. And so when our districts and we are working together, we feel the best approach is not to have the Wyoming Department of Ed in the old way come in and say, oh, we're from the department, we're here to help you. We've had teachers from the field joining us and being willing to work alongside their comrades, their colleagues. And we know that's best practice. And we've been practicing those best practices since we came in because we're practitioners. And so I'm not clear, and perhaps maybe someone can clarify to me, as to what we should, and maybe this is my learning right now, are we not to be responding? Should we be saying we will not roll out the Common Core standards? We will not work with our districts. We will not support them and provide technical assistance. Because what you're asking of me, are you? And I'm saying, of course.
Just a follow-up, and I understand that answer, but I'm more on the appropriation side. Did mm-hmm. you think to ask either to communicate to joint education or to joint appropriations? Just because obviously you knew this was a big issue with the teacher-to-teacher. Did that thought? Did you have that discussion with your senior staff, or did you just assume I have the right to do this, and so we're going to go ahead and roll it out?
Madam Chair, Representative Edmonds, I never have thought, oh, I have the right to do this, and I'm going to go ahead. This is my line of thinking. The Common Core were adopted, and that was last spring. And we're looking at 8% budget cuts. Again, fiscal responsibility. And we knew that we didn't have the $250,000, even though the AG had told us we had, the co-chairs had told us we did not. And so, again, I have requirements to fulfill. Part of the accountability is the Common Core or like standards. That's part of the accountability. I have two masters. I have the federal responsibilities, and I have the state. And our Common Core is both, they're looking at it from a federal level, and then the state has it as an adopted standards. So we have to fulfill those expectations. So I look at fiscally, how do I do this responsibly? And we have within our budgets technical assistance, which made sense to me. Because everyone should be part of this lift. The Department of Ed is about learning.
So, Madam Chairman, just one more. So the split training also addresses Common Core training. Is that what I'm hearing?
Madam Chairman, the split, all of our initiatives right now are Common Core. Everyone since that adoption.
So, Superintendent Hill, how does special education fit into that Common Core standards?
Madam Chairman, special education students are responsible for the same Common Core standards with some adaptations, depending on whether it's an assessment or instructional adaptations and accommodations. But we all have state standards, and the Common Core are for all of our children. The Common Core are part of our Wyoming state standards, so they're for all of our children.
Good. Thank you. All right. I think we're back to Representative Wallace. Hold on.
Just
Representative Harshman.
On the $200 stipends, and I see that the hard part for us to follow is the 900 series document we have for just this first 6 months of this fiscal year just has a name and a number. So I'm trying to look back and try to see if it corresponds with what happened last biennium. So all these $200 stipends in the last biennium, July 1st, 2010 to June 30th, 2012, were all paid, it shows, out of special education. And I'm assuming those were to attend teacher to teacher. And so those came out of an account of professional development I've listened to today, and special education, school improvement, statewide initiatives. Now, I see more $200 stipends and other stipends that in the first 6 months of this year for a new program that now has a special education focus. And I'm assuming then these same $200 stipends are paid out of the same special education account as the previous biennium was. And then answer that one first, I guess. Are these the same funding sources for all these stipends?
Madam Chairman, and Christine, Ms. Steele, I'll have you respond to the funding. I want to be clear. The special education teachers are the ones who are eligible, if you will, for that $200 stipend, and that was prior and to date, correct? And pretty much, there isn't a new approach here in that special educators have. As Cheryl Lane was explaining, an opportunity to do some things here. And I know that there are some regular educators as well if they fulfill certain requirements. Maybe I'm not being clear. Forgive me, Madam Chairman. This is still new to me. And so sometimes, Representative Harshman, I'm not certain I'm asking or answering your question. Maybe we should just go to the funding right now.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Co-Chair and Representative Harshman, if you're looking at the one, this 900 series for the first 6 months, which would be July 1st to October 31st, is that the, may I clarify
yeah,
that?
Yeah, that's exactly.
In there, a general comment first. Regardless of what budget it is, the audience and the intent and purpose of the program we match with the budget. In other words, if we have a training and we focus it on students of English language learners, then that funding would be from that program. So the audience and the intent matches the funding. In this breakout that you see, some of the 200 series or the payments were made for standards revision. Not all of this was splits or the training that we're talking about. In this, you can see some of the standards committee work, which were standards revisions, which were different. You can see some for career tech ed, standards reviews. So those were not the
same. Are you looking at this 6 months?
I'm looking at page 6 of July 1st, 2012 to October 31st, 2012.
Yeah, and I don't have that information.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I just
Pardon
see
me.
Names and
I'm
dollars.
I'm sorry.
And I look back and all of them were paid out of special ed previously in the previous biennium. I mean, I do have that information.
Okay.
And
yeah.
Madam Chairman.
I don't want to burn committee time on this, but it looks like it's the same amount, same funding sources paying these stipends. Are they coming out of the same units you're saying? Maybe they differ with the ELL. I guess we'll need to probably know more about that. And then my last question, I'll get back, Representative Wallace, I apologize. I'm just looking at people and dollars, and I saw like we paid last biennium Ms. Lesher, who I don't know who that is, to deliver instructionally supported professional development 3+8 and teacher to teacher, $37,000. And then we're paying in the first 6 months, that's why I'm trying to kind of find similarities. Paid her $3,400 the first 6 months of this. What is it still delivering teacher to teacher in 3+8, or is that job changing? Who is that person?
Madam Chairman,
Superintendent Hill.
That particular staff member took a sabbatical and is working alongside us full time. And would you like to speak to it, Madam Chairman? Perhaps I should. I don't know if that answers your question, Representative Harshman. Is that what you would?
So no longer working on teacher to teacher.
Madam Chairman, she is a teacher who does work alongside teacher, and they're working on the Common Core standards.
Okay.
And just a clarification, any time that special ed funding was used, it was for special ed benefits. So there are thousands of teachers who have participated who have not received any compensation, and any time any special ed funding has been expended here, it has followed clear guidance from both federal and state requirements.
Well, and I think it's just it's fuzzy enough. It's and for our level of detail, it's frankly hard to follow. And so it's when we're probably going to have to request a little more detail on these 900 series. Is that instead of a name and just a dollar, we're going to have to see when, what was the what service did the vendor perform on that date or through this period of time, and then when was the payment made? And then I'm not chasing, you know, down this rabbit trail trying to look and figure this out. It's really too fuzzy and too impossible.
Madam Chairman.
Superintendent Hill.
And we welcome that because we're learning about this process, too, and we'd be happy to give more details if there if there's an interest. You will notice that there are some within here, and the ones that caught my attention were the ones that were for $8,000, and those were from our former special ed leadership symposiums that were done in isolation, kind of siloed trainings, and they were bringing in outside folks from outside vendors that were very, very, very expensive just for a simple 1 or 2 or 3 days at $8,000 a pop. And I want you to know that that has changed significantly, that those are now being rolled into our summer camp, and that we don't ever want to be paying people extraordinarily outrageous amounts for work that isn't ongoing and specific to the Common Core.
Well, and I appreciate it. And I won't burn any more committee time, but as I go through this, just the food bills and Petroleum Club, this was last by, I guess, $17,000 for PLC training, workshops, rooms, and food. I mean, it's hard for us, and when I see a number, again, so I reiterate my request, please, for more detail. And committee, we're probably going to have to look at some kind of global budget, really of all state government, on these food bills and these meetings and why we rent rooms outside someplace where we have state rooms to use or schools to use, those kind of things. So, anyway, I'll stop. Representative Wallace, my apologies.
May I just follow up? I'm sorry. Forgive me, Representative Wallace. I just wanted to speak to I had the same concerns regarding the amount of money that was being spent. Thank you, Representative Harshman. And I will tell you, we have a special ed director who's in the room with us right now, and she actually now serves on the second floor of the Hathaway building. And you will not see that in any future biennium budget or anywhere. Those things will no longer occur. I had the same concerns that you did. And regarding the use of buildings, the initiative where teachers are working alongside teachers, that happens in schools. And that's a whole scale change for my special ed department. But we feel very strongly about those changes. They haven't been easy to come by, but I assure you that they're in place now.
All right, we're ready for you, Representative Wallace. Thank you for indulging us.
Oh, no worries, Madam Chairman. To the information that has already been requested about this, I think I sense that several of us are deeply troubled by the apparent, maybe I should rephrase that. I still am not seeing how this is any different than the teacher-to-teacher program that we did have quite a lot of discussion and made some decisions over last go-around. So if you can help clarify that, I think that would be helpful. I'd like to see also, who participated in terms of the facilitators, how much they were compensated above and beyond their regular salaries for the work that they were done, whether or not they were providing those services at home or whether they were traveling, how many people from the state office were also part of those programs, and the costs that were associated with those, were they also charged to the split programs? And, whether there's any, there's a lot of discussion here about the special education grant monies being used for this, and since it's obvious that quite a bit of this, or it seems obvious that quite a bit of this training was a much broader mission than just special education, are we risking some kind of compliance issue with the federal government because we're using special education funds for broader core standards training or other things? And then, finally, I remember from our discussions before that there is a considerable amount of funding provided in the school foundation program for local districts, and all of those teachers are fully qualified. We pay them very well. We provide for districts to be able to do that training. So, why is this particular thing needed above and beyond what's already being done? And I guess ultimately, how is this not just the State Department of Education kind of passing out goodies as a Christmas bonus as we're getting close and to the end of the year and sort of cherry picking favorite teachers to get extra money above and beyond what they're already entitled to?
Madam Chairman.
Superintendent Hill.
Representative Wallace, when I think about what I encountered when I walked into the department, and I did see a number of contracts that appeared to be cherry-picking, but they weren't at $200 for follow-up and research and working with your peers and demonstrating that after spending 14 hours in a training and then doing that for a $200 follow-up. They were for thousands and thousands of dollars, like we just discussed. $8,000 for speakers to come in for a day or two. And I saw a tremendous amount of that. I did not see that with teachers at a $200. And by the way, the ones that we're talking about are a very small portion of the thousands who've come out to do this without any compensation volunteering. So I hear your question, and I just want to I look forward to sharing more details with you, because it sounds like that you really need those. And I would also say, is it proper for me to ask a question, Representative Berger?
Go ahead.
Representative Wallace, we're supporting the Common Core implementation. Do you think that is not appropriate?
That's not appropriate.
Yeah.
That's an opinion.
Oh, it's not appropriate?
Yeah,
that's why I asked that question.
I didn't know what the question was.
Oh, okay, that's why I asked.
I'm asking for an opinion.
Okay, so. I didn't
I
know.
So,
Representative Wallace,
more.
That's why I'm learning, so that's why I ask. So I'll take that question back. All right, thank you.
All right, great. Also, I guess in this, as we've discussed the GEMS and the B11s and the realignment, are there staff members here that are a part of this equation? As you move forward with your split in assignments as far as federal funding and state funding that are on this document, too, with the GEMS?
And Madam Chairman, let me just clarify, because you just used split in two different ways.
Right. The split payments, I'm talking about split payments, general fund and federal funds.
Are there staff members here?
No. Involved in the split initiative.
Would you like to go ahead and respond, Christine?
Madam Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, the 29 positions, if may I understand your question, is of the 29 positions, is special education funding involved in any of the 29 positions? Is that your question?
Right, in regard to those positions.
I would need to take a few minutes to look through here, but I certainly would get back to you on that. We'd have to break each of them out by budgets, and certainly we can get that back to you shortly.
That's fine.
Okay.
Thank you. That works. Okay. Representative Edmonds, did you have further questions? And Representative Wallace, do you have further questions? Representative Harshman.
Just a request for information, and I don't know, Fred or whoever's department. I have really four requests, and in regards to the split teacher to teacher. I would like a list of folks who have received the stipend, and then note those who have received it more than once, whether it's twice or three times. And then, so that's the first part. Are there folks who, and I'm just looking at these spreadsheets, it's hard for me to get to it, but are there folks who actually present and make the $500 and then also get the $200 stipend as an attendee? So that's another question I'd like an answer to. And I know we're not going to get that today, but I'd like that in a report. And then three, are there non-teachers, because it says on the flyer, interested individuals, are there, say, private school teachers, non-teachers, parents that are receiving these stipends? And is that appropriate with a use of special ed funds? And then my last request is really, it goes back to this food and all this stuff. I see the stipend. I see a PTSB credit. Those are free, I understand. And then an opportunity for University of Wyoming credit. So I'm assuming we're not paying the University of Wyoming credit if an attendee wants to do it. So I see a head shaking. That's good. But where is are you feeding these attendees lunch and dinner on Friday and Saturday and breakfast, and those costs for meals and snacks and all those things, where does that come out of? Does that come out of a special education fund? And so those are my four questions. We won't have the answer today, but we'd like that reported to the committee, please.
Thank you, Representative Harshman. Senator Meyer, you're up. Do you remember your question?
Absolutely.
Thank you for being patient.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Director Hill, or anyone that's in your shop that can I answer this? My question is kind of goes to the history of methodology and delivering, whether it's curriculum or special ed or different things. And I'll kind of go through what I understand the history of it has been from my perspective of first before I was a legislator, I was on the State Board of Education, and my wife's been an educator for a good number of years. The outreach that I remember 30 years ago was that the districts or the department basically sent the administrator and the curriculum director on a junket to San Francisco or Dallas, Texas or something, and those were about the only people that got the, the benefit of the educational gurus, and then that would come back and they would disseminate it however they saw fit to the districts or within the department. And then it kind of changed where maybe 10 years later they'd have maybe one, maybe three or four people out of our district that were, you know, middle school or grade school or high school go along with those folks, and they went to the same type of junkets, and they would come back, and they were charged with disseminating that throughout their building or throughout the district in some manner, way, shape, or form, and those were extremely expensive junkets, if I recall. I don't believe those things are happening anymore to the extent that they were. And then in our district now, it's more or less a collaborative effort that they may have one expert come in maybe once a year, and then through that year there's a team effort of building through the summer where they have the different grade levels of every teacher in a team, try to determine what the curriculum is, try to build that out, try to build in the interrelationships or the workings, general workings of the school. And it's really the teachers working with the teachers with some direction through the school facilitators, or normally the facilitators that are guiding that. And then that is brought out. And during the summer, they have a stipend. I think in our district, it's only $100 a day. It might have went up to $150 a day. But even at $200 a day, it's still less than what a teacher gets on a daily basis on what their salary is. So it's less than they actually get paid to teach, to attend these different types of opportunities to move that out within this district. And from what I understand, what you're trying to do is to use that model that's happening at the districts to move that out in a cost-effective manner, to take the expertise from the department or from experts that you have the ability to bring into the equation. And I guess the answer to my question is that kind of how the methodology to deliver the knowledge that's necessary for an effective classroom has changed throughout the course of the years?
Madam Chairman, Senator, I smile because you put that into words that I think most would be envious of. I agree with you, and I thank you for your statements. That's exactly what's happening, and I appreciate your understanding of the work before us.
Now,
we did meet with your instructional facilitators on a Friday night and Saturday. I was there during the Saturday, and we worked with some of them. That one wasn't necessarily wasn't focused on the special ed needs necessarily. That one was more of a regular focus, but we have had a few of these special ed splits, but most of them are like what you just described, looking at the curriculum, looking at the students, and again, initiating from that which is closest to the student. And so everyone understands the work versus going out, as you said, on junkets, coming back, seeing how much actually transpires, you know, is transmitted afterwards. But yes, you are exactly right, and that's what we are again, joining and supporting, and that's where our technical assistance lies.
So it's basically been an evolution of the methodology about how you transmit the things that are necessary. And I think you actually answered my second question as far as, but maybe you could go into some more detail as far as the communication between the districts and the Wyoming Department of Education as to whether it's your top-down model vision or is it more of a collaborative effort, a common collaborative effort before you go out and initiate the special education program. I'm just curious about how much communication you have before you go to a district to do the implementation.
Madam Chairman, and I want you to speak as well, Cheryl. It's absolutely working alongside. The top down, I think, was in part because by the nature, when there are statutes, and in this case, if there were to be language around Common Core, the department might have in the past, without educators, practitioners in the department, felt like we needed a checkoff list. Have you done this? Have you done this? Have you done this? And not been able to actually provide the kind of technical experience that you understand. Today, the department, even I smile because our HR director is even a teacher. We have that kind of technical or understanding. Practitioners are in the field or in our work, and so the department has more practitioners. And I believe that old saying of "we're from the department, we're here to help you" has changed to we have people who actually call us and say, "Will you come?" I was speaking with someone in the northern part of the state, Teresa Brown. She said, "We need you to come up for 2 days, and we need to do some of the Common Core work with you." And she's working with some of our folks today on that. I'm talking about things that are happening right now. Yesterday, again, we had people from the districts, from Cody, from Gillette, from different places in our state who are talking about what they want Pia Hansen, I shouldn't be using names, in the numeracy rollout, what they want to work with her on, what they want Cheryl Lane to work on with them. So we do have that kind of relationship developing, but it's taken a while because the department has not been seen the way you described. It hasn't been seen that way for a very long time. We used to be that way, Senator. When we were in higher standing in the United States, we did more of what you described. We lost our way, and we became a compliance-oriented agency, and we're moving back that direction.
The other question I have is basically on the efficiency of the delivery, and Representative Harshman, I gave him a promotion there, brought up some of the costs that are associated with this delivery, and so I'd like to, a couple of questions. One, do you see that the basically the junket model, is it more expensive than what we're doing now, and have you identified some cost savings in the future where you can make it even more efficient?
Madam Chairman, Senator, I would say it's costly in two ways. Costly, and let's just look at the Pearson offering to do nearly $7 million in professional development, where our folks did it for around $180,000 and achieved the same result. In fact, I would see better. So I would say when you do those junkets or you have outside contractors and vendors coming in, it's not necessarily lasting, and also there's a cost in the time that is expended there and the inability to make lasting change. So there's a cost in a different way than just the financial cost.
Madam Chairman, and finally, in the area of which you alluded to, you thought it was more effective or as at least effective, what steps have you put in to, I guess, audit the progress to make sure that, I know you can't get the results on your special ed right now, but what steps are you putting in place as far as benchmarks or trying to figure out to be accountable to make sure that what you think is going on and whether you're actually delivering the goods, you believe it's a good process, that it's the right way, but what are you putting in place to make sure that the process of outreach is accountable?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Thank you, Senator Meyer. When we think about what you all decided in the legislature regarding assessment, right now we have a state assessment and then ACT, and so we'll be measured by those, of course. Those are on the larger scale. Now we're also working alongside the University of Wyoming and our content experts as to developing district-level assessments. They're common district-level assessments so that and this is to help implement the Common Core and to assess how well we're doing on that implementation.
I understand the Common Core aspect of that, and that's been a collaboration between, an effort by the legislature and your department and various departments for several years. specifically in the area of a special ed.
Oh.
You know, that's something that, you know, I don't know how effective the legislature has been in pinpointing that area of it, and so that's what I'm kind of interested in.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and Senator Meyer. Special ed is an area that is near and dear to my heart, and I would say that we have a lot more work still to be done there. Our responsiveness prior to the current administration was not as high as I would have liked in this area. Ms. Lane, would you like to speak to that?
Thank you,
Ms. Lane.
Senate Chairman and Senator Meyer. We have a couple of ways of getting a picture as to the effectiveness of this work. And, we all in education hesitate to say, it's because of this or it's because of this, because we know it's so very dynamic when you see results of kids. But it's a good sign, for instance, that the evaluations of those folks who have attended on the weekends has been out of 5 points, about 4.8 positive. Very positive in terms of what teachers feel they can then go and implement. And then we have seen a significant, an interesting change in scores in our state. The scores have improved on the PAWS assessment overall. I'm not going to be as facile at telling you the data, but it's something like just a few districts out of 48 are in improvement. In special ed, the numbers of schools and districts in improvement because of AYP kids, because of special ed kids, IEP students, those kids that have individual learning plans and are special ed, the numbers of schools in AYP trouble because of that subgroup has declined. And I don't think anyone would say, it was because of this or it was because of this, because it's such a dynamic thing. Things change all the time, but I know that there's a sense that this partnership is productive from a variety of both lots of anecdotal evidence, and I think that quantifiable evidence that, there's a big fear amongst educators in the state right now that with the Common Core standards and their alleged rigor for all kids will mean an implementation dip that you'll notice here, that it will be in the papers. In other words, our scores will decline. And we're scrambling to not have that happen so that our communities around the state that are so invested in their kids and in their schools and in the success don't have that burden to deal with. And so right now that's what we're working on. And I think that we'll see that we can ameliorate that dip because of a lot of collaborative work. So with secondary school principals meeting to talk about, ACT's the assessment. All right, can we do anything to tweak our training around that? And we have really a neat way to work with Gear Up with the University of Wyoming, as well as schools that have evidenced quite a bit of success in their work around the ACT, secondary schools, high schools. Out there sharing with principals at the principal's request, curriculum coordinators really wanting to collaborate because they feel the pressure of the rigorous standards and potential dips. So I think it's a big collaboration. And to go back, I think there's evidence, qualitative evidence and quantitative evidence, that working closely together, linking arms, not just with the legislature, everyone in this state, with the stake in kids, linking arms around what we want and what we expect and training ourselves for that. I think we're seeing a positive piece here.
Madam Chairman, one other thing, and it has to do with schools that are going to fail the AYP for the third year, and I guess I'll call that the educational cliff for that school. I couldn't get a clear answer last year from anybody, my district or from you guys, about what happens. You know, we know there's supposed to be some sanctions or some different things that's going to happen. And I've got two schools that they're doing the best they can, but I don't know whether they're going to be in the third year, and I don't know what's going to happen at that point in time. And, you know, we don't know whether the department's going to take that school educational process over or what, how much intervention is going to happen in those areas. And so, you know, with some of these schools coming up to that threshold time limit, what plans are in place to, I guess, have some continuity in, or at least some clarity about what people can expect?
Superintendent Hill.
Thank you, Chairman Berger. And this is a layered question or response, Senator. I know what you're talking about because I was just a couple miles away from here at one of the largest junior highs, and when we were in AYP, we didn't see any change from the department nor from our district leadership. No one necessarily came to visit it either way, even when we started making AYP. Now, having served as a superintendent, we're in the transitionary period. So, for instance, there's a most states have asked for the ESEA waiver. There wasn't the reauthorization of ESEA, and so they've asked for a waiver. We did not. We asked for the freezing of our AMOs, our annually measured objectives, those targets. But we did not sign on to the waiver because of the teacher evaluation linked to student performance component. So our districts would say, yes, there are still those sanctions from the old No Child Left Behind. And if your district's in its fourth year, there's certain sanctions. That's the furthest our districts have been. Third year, second year, first year, and holding. So there are sanctions, and they all comply as of No Child Left Behind. But did they make significant changes, those particular sanctions in those districts? I would say no. We know that it didn't work. That's why there's the reauthorization in place. We're now embarking on the accountability bill, which has the model and the state system of support, and the department has done significant work in both areas. And so I would say to you, we're on that cusp and within that change of No Child Left Behind and the Wyoming State Accountability System, and we're right there in the midst of it. So it's not as clear right now because most districts would say this will be gone, No Child Left Behind will be gone here shortly, though they will be compliant because they are. And then the accountability system in the state, there's still some things to be flushed out, even though we're moving along that process. We're very close to having that model ready so that you can see once we have equity in there, I think we'll be ready to show what it looks like, where our schools are leveled, depending on where, again, those targets from the PJP are determined. So to answer your question, there's still a lot of work to be done in that regard, and you're looking at your district and you're saying, so what's going to happen with them? I would say when I sit before you that this next year, they will know. But at this moment, I cannot tell you exactly what that will look like as far as what level they will be in and then the consequences or the supports that would be provided for them because those things aren't fleshed out in our state. And if we look at No Child Left Behind, I can show you what their consequences are or their supports per No Child Left Behind. I just don't have that before me right now.
Well, when we can get the clarity, Madam Chairman, it sure would be nice to know because people are still kind of wondering.
Madam Chairman, if I might, Senator Meyer, I would be happy to show you where your district is for No Child Left Behind right now, because that would give you the clarity that you need for your district, and I'd be happy to share that with you and show you where they are in that compliance.
Okay. Superintendent Hill, I know there's possibly some other folks that have questions too, but I'd kind of like to wrap up on the realignment of employees and the unit numbers and GEM and all the other acronyms that we're learning today. I am curious, though, about the Accountability Act and the status of it today. Some of the members have been involved in that, but many have not. And just if you have the staff, if you are fully funded for those positions in addressing the Accountability Act that we passed last year. And when you went through the GEM process, did you do you anticipate having the federal funds immediately available to fulfill those requests? I'm just curious if there's going to be a deficit or where we are, and in particular the positions, if they've been realigned in order to address the requirements that we put in that legislation for accountability.
Madam Chairman, Regarding federal compliance, we have been in federal compliance and will continue to be in federal compliance. And I have given you some examples as to why those 29 positions required it. And I could give you more examples if you needed that. Regarding the accountability, we'll continue to work on that. If you'd like to see the model or the state system of support that we have in progress, we'd be happy to show that to you. I don't think that the committee, nor am I actually prepared to show some of those things, but I'd love to do it. So I'd welcome that opportunity.
So if it's okay with the committee, I'd like to get Mr. Hansen back up here and to walk through the budget. I'd certainly like to see if we could get them through by noon, and we also have their foundation budget 205 also to just cover. Anything else, committee, at the moment that you need to ask? Okay. Thank you. All right, Mr. Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe we left off on I think I was at page 28.
I think that's I'm just let me flip back there quick, make sure. Yes. Thank you. Continue.
6104, reading assessment, is a restricted budget in the ETA, and so the superintendent and the JEC restored the proposed 8% reduction on that, and we took it from other budgets. Assessment administration, the budget is found on page 32. And we have the same thing in 6104. We have a restricted budget funded by general funds, and the 8% proposed cut was restored in this budget. All right. Page 35 is teacher leader quality, and this budget had a supplemental request relating to the position realignment, and it is not included in the revised appropriation in the far right-hand column. Any questions on that? I'll move on to page 38, school improvement. Same issue. There was a minor change proposed in the position realignment, and it is not included in the budget now. I'm getting ahead of myself here. School improvement. All right. So 6114. And by the way, Madam Chair, for the benefit of the committee, there are budgets on my sheet right here that are not in your book. If there was no change to it, A&I did not include that unit in your book. So I'm just going to slog through the book here and not go to here very much. Health and safety on page 43 had a proposed 8%. Budget reduction accepted by the JEC, and we also had a proposed position realignment for that was not approved by the governor, and the governor did approve the $37,354 proposed cut in health and safety. All right. Madam Chair, the next budget is on page 48. Same story as the previous one, a proposed 8% budget reduction approved by the JEC, the governor, and with a supplemental request for
position realignment, which was not approved.
Madam Chair. Madam Chairman, I need to point out, you may recall back in November, I think it was November, we had some dialogue about four different units that were impacted by 100 series reductions. And we indicated there was a need for us to follow up with the department and work through and obtain specific details from them with respect to how they intended to apply those reductions. And with respect to three of those positions in three different units, we've identified some detail, but there's still in this unit has a one of those positions. In this particular case, we need to follow up with the agency still, as well as with your staff, to exactly nail down the details associated of what positions affected by how much, so that when you guys proceed with your work, you have all of the detail necessary for you to take informed action on what's being proposed by the agency. And the 6117 is in specifically the unit where I don't feel like we have the detail we need to be able to provide that information to you for your decision making.
Okay. And Mr. Richards, did you have comments on that too?
Madam Chair, I concur. I think the idea here is to avoid discrepancies between the budgeted amounts and the personnel amounts in the D sheets. We've seen how this confusion can create further confusion 2-4 years later. So they're recommending returning as portion of their reductions part of the general funds, but we don't know what position that came from, and it. So tying those together will provide a paper trail into the future.
Okay, good. So committee, just make certain to bookmark that or flag that page so when you get to markup, you can address the issue. Superintendent Hill, did you have a follow-up?
Madam Chairman, we would welcome that opportunity to clear that and make that process transparent for future years and administrations.
Okay, Mr. Hansen?
Madam Chair,
I'm sorry.
Just one final comment. I'll point out the other three affected units when we arrive at those.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I could respond to that just a little bit. Again, our budget cut for general funds, we said what we were going to do is we're going to assign this staff to other federally funded projects, and their work hours would be changed to the corresponding, would be charged to the corresponding federal budget. So, again, we can't tell you today exactly what they're going to do over the next year 100%. But the idea is they will spend less time in COPS juvenile detention and more time in related federal budgets. And so we'll go into detail with that with both LSO and ANI. But it really, the two requests are somewhat similar, the supplemental request and the 8% reduction request. So, okay. All right, Madam Chair, with 48 being done, I'll move on to special education data and monitoring. On page 50, the proposed 8% reduction was approved by the JEC and the governor, and again, there is a... In this particular budget, one of the positions was moved over to the IT, to ETS. Any questions on this budget, Madam Chair?
Madam Chairman,
Mr.
this
Johnson,
is another affected unit by position.
So we'll flag it. Okay. Continue.
6120... On page 53, early learning, had a proposed 8% budget cut of $8,803. And the JEC, we had to make up for some of the changes in the restricted budgets, I believe. We had added additional 8% cuts, and you'll see those in column 6. We eliminated an AWAC position and had other cuts, other adjustments in column 6. of $197 net of $197 there. Bottom line, another $46,723 in 8% budget cuts out of this budget. Moving on to 6123 on page 58. This budget had an original proposed cut of $106,050, and the governor restored $50,000 into that budget after consulting with ETS.
Mr. Jones.
Madam Chair, if I could get the committee to go back to page 57, just one page back. I'd like to highlight something for you here. You may recall when ETS was in the room earlier this week with you to talk about three contested IT positions. One of those positions is in Unit 6123, and the detail for that position and its associated costs, both salary and benefits, is on page 57.
Madam Chair, if there's no questions on page 58, I'll move on to career technical education. This budget was also slated for an 8% cut, and Superintendent Hill, after visiting with the governor and explaining her concerns about this budget and the possibility of it affecting our matching with the federal program, the governor restored the cut of $36,790. No questions? I'll move on to page 63. State Voc Ed Finance has a proposed 8% budget cut approved by the JEC and the governor. No questions on that budget. Madam Chair, I'll move to page 66. This budget is in your budget book because it does not have an 8% proposed reduction because it is not a general fund budget, but we had, as part of our big B11 supplemental request, we had a position movement in there. It was not yet approved. Madam Chair, the next budget for your review is on page 69, IT Support Services. We have all three categories in this budget. We have the original 8% cut. After meeting with the JEC, we moved another $10,000 cut into this budget to make up for the others that weren't cut. And then we also have some positions being transferred out of this budget to ETS under column 4.
Mr. Jones.
Madam Chair, on page 68, once again, just some detailed information with respect to the second of three contested positions with respect to IT consolidation.
Good. Okay.
All right, then, with your permission, Madam Chair, I'll move on to the next budget, which is found on page 73. Again, this is a school foundation budget, so there's no 8% cut, but it had our original supplemental request for position movement. After that, we'll go to page 75. Fusion Resources. This particular budget had the IT consolidation on here of a dollar. I think that's what happened on here. There was some movement. I really don't recall the details of this budget. You have to forgive me. If there's any questions, we'll be happy to follow up with you.
Mr. Jones. He's going to take care of that.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you very much. Please disregard the dollar, but it was our way to make sure this budget showed up in our budget book, because if there's not a change in a proposed budget, it doesn't print in our book. The reason we wanted this unit to print is because on page 74, you will note the third of three contested IT positions and the detail associated with that. So that position resides in this particular unit, which is why we approached it in the manner we did.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. All right. Page 77, another example of Superintendent Hill and the Governor reviewing 8% cuts that could affect those who need it the most, who need the programs the most. And so the Governor agreed to restore the $36,382 cut to the deaf and hard of hearing outreach.
Mr. Jones.
And Madam Chair, this 6141 is where another affected unit is, or affected position is, with respect to my prior description. And we'll need to work with your staff as well as with agency staff.
Okay. Good. Continue, Mr. Hanson.
Thank you. And visually handicapped services on page 80 is the... is the third budget restored by the Governor and Superintendent Hill of the 8% cuts. Again, it was deemed that this particular program could not. And the last one is on page 83. The JEC and the Governor both agreed that the general fund funding to the tribal council schools should not be affected.
Okay. Hold on a second. Mr. Jones and then Senator Meyer.
Madam Chair, back on page 80, unit 6142 is where that fourth position is that will require reconciliation amongst the staffs.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Senator Meyer.
Can you just refresh my memory about why we use general fund and not foundation funds on this? I'm sure there's a reason. I just forgot it.
Mr. Hanson?
Madam Chair, Senator Meyer, my recollection, I was here at the creation, was that the tribal council schools are not, by definition, public schools and therefore cannot be paid for out of school foundation. That's my recollection.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Is this St. Stephen's?
Madam
Chair. Hanson?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, and I can respond to that then, Madam Chairman. It's a contract BIA school, and it's outside the system, and so the BIA pays a certain percentage of it, yet if you look at the way we do our ADM funding, it's below what the other schools get, so this tries to make up for that. I think that's the way that works. Yeah. So it's a contract BIA school. Money comes from the federal government to St. Stephen's for those kids.
That's right.
And it's below where we are at the ADM level. This tries to bring parity to it. I think that's the way that works.
I'm sure that's correct.
Getting a high five from staff.
Madam Chairman, I guess with that being said, is there anything in definitions or something where we could use school foundation funds? I think we used some funds for the challenge program, didn't we, school foundation funds, so, or not? I'm trying to think of other places that might be close where we've used funds and just.
Matt or Don, can you respond?
Madam Chair, to my knowledge, school foundation funds are only used for public entities.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And Don, do you want to just confirm that?
Madam Chairman, there are school foundation funds that fund a portion of the Youth Challenge Program in Guernsey.
Well, I'm just hoping that we could find a loophole, but keep looking for it.
All right. Continue, Mr. Hanson.
Let's see. Well, Madam Chair, if that ends, all of the issues regarding 8% cuts and IT changes. The budgets that you're going to look at and the federal programs are all related to the proposed position movement, and it's not been approved. Do you want to go through each budget anyhow on that?
I don't think we need to at this point, do we? I'm looking at Mr. Richards here to see if we need to review them at this point. No. Unless the committee has a specific question on one.
Okay. All right. Madam Chair, then, if you'll go to Agency 205.
Right, School Foundation.
I want to just bring the committee up on one issue. Let's see, it's not in here. The very largest budget in state government is budget 4101, which is not in here because there's no proposed supplemental request. But I believe that after the Craig report comes out in January and the LSO staff review it, there might be an adjustment to this budget if they review that funding needs to be increased per the model calculation. I'm not aware that needs to happen right now, but they'll bring it to you, I believe, in January if that happens. So. Madam Chair, the only budget for your review and then in 205 is found on page 13. It has an IT consolidation amount that goes to the ETS. And again, we also had a supplemental request regarding a position in the Big B11. Okay. So that concludes our budget.
Hey, Mr. Hansen, committee, are there other questions? Senator Perkins?
I was just being new to this process. Under the 205 on the sheet at the bottom, there's about, at least $100 million down there under the 4201 down to 4702. And just for an item, Madam Chair, maybe you can even answer this for me, but why are those, because are those general fund monies? I guess that's the first question.
Mr. Hansen?
Madam Chair, they're all school foundation.
It's all
205 is all school
all
foundation.
All school foundation. Okay, that answers the question. Thank you.
You have a question? Representative Esquivel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. How about an update from the department on how we're doing with school safety? That seems to be the area where I'm getting the most phone calls and parents concerned about their children, especially, we put that $200,000 in last budget and just want a quick update on that.
Madam Chairman.
Go ahead.
Joining me is Terry Wickert. And Terry is the director that oversees one of these, this particular work.
Madam Chairman, Representative Esquivel, thank you for your request. Most of the legislators in the room may recall that we did receive $250,000 as one of our priority requests in the biennial budget, and that $250,000 was awarded for school safety initiatives, and specifically, $200,000 of that was to flow through to school districts via a competitive grant process. That process was very quickly created and implemented before school was out and awards were made. I believe 11 or 13 awards were made to school districts. We had about twice that number of applicants for those school safety monies. Everyone that was awarded received somewhere around $5,000. We have decided that $200,000 would be spread across the biennium, so just $100,000 was awarded for this past school year. So those awards are in school districts. The work is underway. We have a consultant who is actually the school safety consultant who is tracking the progress of those. He's actually providing technical assistance today and is out out state doing that very thing. And then the remaining funds of that particular budget was $50,000. And to refresh your memory on that, that's primarily awarded for the purpose of paying our vendor, and that vendor is WeTip, and they provide the safety anonymous tip line for students, adults, anyone who wants to access that line and provide a tip related to terrorism, bullying, suicide, suggestions, and those kinds of things. So that's a quick summary of the $250,000 that was awarded for anti-bullying and school safety.
Follow-up, Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Madam Chairman. About how many tips have you received just in the past 6 months?
Madam Chair, Representative Esquivel, I'm sorry I don't know that answer to that question for this school year, but that is something that we track and we can get that for you.
It is being utilized.
Yes, it is being utilized. We've actually turned up the heat and become more aggressive about providing posters, brochures, little business cards, if you will, that every student has that they can carry in their pockets. So we believe that we're pretty proactive, and we're working with our partner, WeTip, in keeping that information out in front of students and educators. But I would have to check that data for you. I'm sorry I wasn't prepared to give that to you, but it is available to us.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you, Ms. Winger. And just to be aware, you know, we had another potential suicide this week, a 10-year-old boy. And it disturbs me, and that is a concern of the parents, and I get a lot of phone calls about it, a lot of emails about it. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Superintendent Hill.
Madam Chairman, Representative Esquivel, we appreciate your work in this area and also your leadership so that the $250,000 would be available. As you know, there are several million that had been federally funded for these initiatives and programs, and that is no longer available and has not been. And so the $250,000 is very much appreciated by our districts and certainly us. Thank you.
Representative Walls. Madam Chairman, I think we're kind of wrapping up, so I could appropriate time to ask a different question.
Yes.
We recently received, or I recently received, a report that on usage of the state plane, mm-hmm. and I noticed with interest that the Department of Education was the second largest user of the state planes by a pretty large amount. And so, first of all, does that come out of your 6102, your superintendent's office budget? Where is that in the budget?
Madam Chairman.
Sure, Superintendent.
Representative Wallace, Christine Steele will be coming to the table to explain.
Ms. Steele?
Madam Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, and Representative Wallace, whenever we use the state plane, it is always proportionally split funded. In other words, part of it may come out of the 6102, the superintendent's administrative budget. Part of it may come out of other programs because there are other program people with us doing whatever type of technical assistance or being in the field with the districts. So it is divided amongst several budgets.
Follow up. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I know we've asked you for other stuff. Would it be possible for you to provide us with a report that kind of shows where what you were using the plane for and how the budget numbers were used, and that would be helpful, I think. And then are there ever and this is a question for you, Superintendent Hill, is there ever when you're taking these trips and flying around,
Are those trips ever combined with other activities that, you know, I'm assuming that you're trying to maximize your time when you're going to these places. So can you just kind of give us a example of the kind of thing that you might typically do, a typical itinerary for these trips?
Superintendent Hill.
Madam Chairman, Representative Wallace, here's an example. The State Board had a meeting in Teton County, and I had planned on driving. One of the board members, we also had an advisory meeting in Cheyenne, and asked to fly with me. I said, well, I'll be driving and stopping off in Rawlins to be in the meeting. Well, when we sat down and we actually looked at the funding, it made better sense for board members and Department of Ed staff to actually fly up that morning and then fly back the next night so that we didn't have two overnight stays that we would have had we been driving. So it actually shortened the amount of time we were out, and so the costs were the cost would be balanced out, so that would be actually more frugal, if you will, to take the plane than to have all the staff members and all the vehicles spending the night, the number of nights it would have taken to accomplish the same goal. So we always look at that when we're imagining that plane. Is it most cost effective or not? And what is the work that's done there when we're going into the district or we're going into a particular community? So we do that as a matter of course. That fiscal responsible kind of thinking that goes on.
Thank you. This may be a question for some of you who've been there longer. How does the current – I just got a snapshot, you know, currently. How does the usage of the plane by the department now compare to previous administrations?
Madam Chair.
More or less about the same? How does it fit in?
Madam Chair, Representative Wallace, I would imagine that it's different. My vehicle also has significant miles on that didn't have the former administration. I'm out working in the districts and alongside the people of Wyoming significantly more than I would say the former administration. I would be cautious to put my staff into a situation of comparing us because that was their former leader, but I would say that it's significantly more that I'm out in the field. So I would say the plane usage would be more, and I would say that my vehicle mileage would be significantly more than former administrations.
Madam Chair.
Pardon me. Representative Harshman.
Just to follow up on Representative Wallace's question, then so you described one to Jackson. Are these then pretty well planned out? I mean, you know when you're going to go to Sheridan or when you're – I mean, are there other trips, upcoming trips planned in the next quarter or so? I mean, usually most of us, we have these on our calendar, these events that we have to attend. What are the next itineraries for aircraft usage coming up?
Madam Chairman, Representative Harshman, we don't have any on the agenda. We'll be here for the session for the next quarter. And I would say to you, Sheridan, that is usually a round trip. In fact, I found out that I do round trips to Fremont County. I was in Fremont 17 times. And because I do a round trip, leaving very early in the morning and coming home late at night, that the state does not pay for my meals. Because my staff may have taken the night before and spent and slept over, and then the night after, I find that I have enough work that I don't have that luxury. So meals are not paid for if you make round trips, and I make a number of them. Gillette is a round trip, Sheridan's a round trip, and so would Fremont County School. So there are times that we have taken the plane, and we try to get as much in and be as efficient with that particular resource as possible.
I think the question, the report I think we got, it was like 76 flights from the Department of Ed. And that's what I saw. It was like And maybe I'm quoting it wrong. Somebody correct me.
Madam Chairman, may I intervene very quickly? That is not possible. That might be a total of 76 passengers over 2 years. But I will tell you that 76 flights from the Department of Education is an outrageous number for us to even consider. I could probably count it on, it wouldn't take the people at this table to count the number of times with their fingers many times I've used that plane.
Well,
thank
I appreciate
you,
that,
Mr.
And that's good that we got that out, because that was some of that, maybe it was passenger flights, and so glad we're, but we'll see that, I guess, when we get back to us.
Madam Chairman, Representative Harshman, my guess is we'll read about that one in the Casper Star. I hope that you'll help me clear that one up when it comes
up.
Well,
I don't think we will. I mean, I think you addressed it, and I'm satisfied with that. I think, and we'll just get more information. It's probably online. I think that's where we got it, I think. But
Normally, there's a quarterly log report that comes out, and I let Representative Wallace
Madam Chairman, I have the report in front of me, and it's number of legs.
It's number of legs.
So probably roughly half of 76 flights, although there could be a trip that went from dot to dot to dot that would actually be three legs.
Gotcha. Okay, so there you go. It's at least half of that.
Madam Chairman.
At least less.
Superintendent Hill.
I can assure you that it's significantly less than half of that, that it would not be 36. So I will look forward to sharing that information with you as to how many legs are involved here. Well, I will be surprised if it is 36. Well, I will be surprised.
It's the Department of Transportation's aeronautics log.
Which does list flights and passengers.
I'll look forward to hearing that, Madam Chairman.
Okay, good. Any further questions on that subject? Are there other questions of Superintendent Hill and
Madam Chairman?
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And just a little bit about what Representative Harshman said about, seems like 5 days ago, it was about an hour ago. And what I wanted to, another thing I want to have cleared up, and we heard a lot of discussion about programs and whether it was coming out of special ed and the teacher to teacher and all that. And I'm not going to get into that specifically. All I want to know is what legislative, and I'm going back to the process where if the superintendent has a program and she wants to do it and she comes to the legislature and we buy in or we buy out, what happened and which programs were bought in by the legislature and which ones weren't when you do the information for Steve? That's where I'm coming from. Because if there's good programs that make a lot of sense, and then if the legislature says no, then that's one issue. But if there's programs that the legislature says no to, and we go ahead and continue, then I just want to find out if there's a way to determine that without getting in. And this is me coming in late, but I think the process works, and there's a reason for it. It's been around a long time, and I want to know what has been within that, if there's things outside of it, what they were. Thank you.
Mr. Hansen.
Thank you. Madam Chair, we had two other issues. We just want to ask your opinion if you want us to cover it or not.
Go ahead.
In November, Senator Nicholas had requested some detailed information from us on comparing beginning teachers at the districts with beginning teacher salaries, the model, and also by district model funding for aides, librarians, people support, things like that. Did the committee have any questions
on
that report?
Let's just take a minute, Mr. Hansen, on it. I think the committee, if you have it before you, it's handout number 9. Want to take a minute while we have the agency here. And I guess, and while they're doing that, is there another question?
The second question was, did the committee want an update on the status of sequestration?
Well, most definitely, Mr. Hansen.
So do we need to pass out your...
While folks are looking at this, we'll put this...
So we'll pass out the handout on sequestration.
Okay, good. Well, thank you.
We'll tell you what we know and we'll tell you what we don't know.
All right.
About sequestration.
So it hasn't been stamped in yet, but if you want to go ahead and just speak about it, that'd be fine. Identify yourself here at the mic and on the sequestration.
Oh,
Dr. David Holbrook will address that.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
go ahead. Dr.
David
Holbrook.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Pull the mic to you, please. Yeah, thanks.
At this point in time, I'm sure you're all aware that Congress is pretty much stalled on trying to come up with a balanced budget. Sequestration is due to the Budget Control Act of 2011, and we're coming to that fiscal cliff where Congress is supposed to have a balanced budget by the end of the year or in January. Then there will be mandatory cuts that will go into place. At this point in time, we do not know whether that's actually going to happen or not. We're hoping Congress can resolve this issue so that we do not face any of these cuts. The estimate of the cuts are anywhere between 7% and 10%. No one is 100% sure. When it comes to education funding, there's a process that Congress does called forward funding where they actually award money in advance. So there was some concern at the beginning of this calendar year that in January next year that there would be significant cuts, the 7 to 10% in that range, to the funding that flows through from through the No Child Left Behind Act to our school districts. There was a letter came out in July of this year from Anthony Miller, Deputy Secretary at the U.S. Department of Education, and he reported that funding for the 12-13 school year will not be affected if sequestration goes into place until July 2013. So they would not take the cuts out of the money that they forward funded, but they would wait until the July awards and actually cut the funding at that point in time so that it would not affect the current school year's funding. So that's one of the big issues. And if sequestration does go into place, you'll see you have a handout with preliminary estimates for potential sequestration cuts. And that handout is based on the 2012-13 funding. It is preliminary. Allocations change year to year. What you have is what was awarded in July of this year for the 12-13 school year. That's on the first page. The second page looks at I just put some estimates in there for 8% cuts on the second page and 9% cuts on the third page. So you can see some of the affected programs and if those cuts went into place, approximately the differences by comparing the current funding to the next year to the 8% and 9% fund cuts that are there. So you have the current funding on the first page and then the 8% and 9% cuts on the following pages. The only funds that are education-related that will be impacted in January are the impact aid funds, and those do not actually flow through our department. They go directly to the school districts, and I don't have those figures. Are there any questions, Madam Chairman?
Questions of Dr. Holbrook? Thank you. I appreciate that update on the potential sequestration cuts. Okay, back to the document handout 9. Senator Nicholas, did you have any questions of Mr. Hansen on that document? Okay, hold on a minute.
Madam Chair, would you like a brief overview on this document for the benefit
Please.
Of the new folks?
You bet.
If with your permission, I'll bring Jed Ciccarelli, who prepared the document.
Right. He's been sitting there a long time. I'll change seats. Go ahead, Jed.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll just try to be brief with an overview of the document. Again, my name is Jed Ciccarelli. I'm the School Foundation Supervisor with the Department of Education. As Fred mentioned, the memo before you addresses the additional data and analysis that was requested during the last meeting. This memo includes two attachments. The first is a district-level analysis of model-generated FTE and salary compared to actual. The second is a comparison of model starting teacher salaries to the actual district-reported starting salaries. In regards to the first analysis included in Attachment 1, this builds on the framework that was done as part of the Continued Review of Educational Resources in Wyoming, or CREW report. Utilizing essentially the same methodology that was contained within the CREW report, we were able to link specific staff-level FTE data to employees' reported regular salary data for their core contract duties. For comparison purposes, the analysis was broken down into the model staffing categories you see on page 2 of the memo. When I presented the crew data to the committee last month, I mentioned that staffing data reported for the 11-12 school year included a number of refinements, including the ability of districts to distinguish federally funded positions from state-funded staff. While these refinements resulted in vast improvements in our ability to align funding model resources with actual data, I anticipate the districts will continue to improve on the identification of funding resources of staff. Just as a point of clarification, additional assignment areas such as special education, transportation, food service, and federally funded positions have been excluded from the analysis. Extra salary pay for bonuses or pay for additional workloads such as coaching, overtime, or facilitating extracurricular activities has also been omitted from both the FTE and salaries portion of the analysis. Additionally, because district staffing collections do not collect staff-level data for benefits, we were not able to provide a comparison between model-generated resources for benefits and actual staff-level expenditures for benefits. When reviewing the data at the state level, the observations are fairly consistent with the analysis of the crew report. Acknowledging that there are variations on how districts deploy model salary resources in the different staffing categories, total statewide regular salary expenditures, as compared to model-generated resources, staffing resources in particular, are comparable at nearly 98% of what the model generates. Again, school districts employed approximately 19% more district administration staff than the model provides. However, this represents only approximately 4% more in payroll expenditures. When adjusting for teachers and non-record, the funding model provided approximately 577 more FTE teachers than employed by school districts. While districts employ approximately 8.7% less FTE than the model provides, they spend approximately 2% less in actual salaries, indicating that districts are hiring less teachers and paying them more. School districts utilize 152 fewer certified librarians than the model provides. However, when considering the number of staff employed for media technology positions, it appears districts are utilizing more non-certified staff to serve these functions. Wyoming school districts do not utilize certified tutor FTEs to the extent that they are provided for in the model. The model to actual FTE difference of a negative 212 equates approximately to $10.5 million less in tutor salaries than provided for in the model. And since consistent with the observations in the crew report, the data indicates that Wyoming school districts continue to utilize instructional aid, spending approximately $7.3 million more than provided for by the funding model. Madam Co-Chair, if there are not any questions over Attachment 1, I can briefly touch on Attachment 2.
Go ahead, Jed.
The starting teacher salaries, if again, I'll turn your attention to Attachment 2. This was the additional information that was requested for average starting teacher salaries by district. The first salary column represents the model average beginning teacher salary for a teacher with a bachelor's degree and no prior experience. This figure does contain the additional 5 contract days for professional development and is adjusted by the district's regional cost adjustment. Moving into the next column, each fall districts report a salary schedule file containing salary distribution for staff members on a particular schedule. This data was utilized to provide starting salary by district for teachers with no prior K-12 teaching experience and a bachelor's degree with no additional credits. The variance to the model is found in the next two columns. A more in-depth analysis was also conducted by identifying staffing records for teachers with no previously reported experience on the district staffing collection. In many districts, these salaries were very close or equal to the salary schedule. The variations you see between the two may be due in part to teachers that were not placed on a district salary schedule or having education and exceeding the bachelor's degree. In some instances, districts may have chosen to hire at higher levels on the salary schedule in an effort to attract highly qualified staff. That concludes my summary of the attachments, and of course I'd be happy to address any questions.
Let me ask. Go ahead.
Co-Chair.
Go ahead, Kurt.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Senator Meyer.
Couple of questions on 1 and 2. I thought we were going to drill down into elementary, middle school, and high school on that, and
Question, can we drill down that far, and can we actually drill down as far as a building? I think LSO staff told me that we could actually do it on a building-by-building basis if we wanted to. Go ahead.
Jed? Sure. Madam Chairman, Senator Meyer, I'd have to look into that and probably work with LSO staff to determine how we would approach that and provide a reliable.
Madam Chairman, I think part of the reason for that is, and this goes into my question on the average starting teacher salaries, is if we can drill down in the elementary and somebody that's going to college can see a pretty big difference between starting salaries on elementary versus middle school or high school, it might make a determination about where they want to put their educational efforts in as far as what type of degree they want. And I think that would be beneficial to folks entering school and getting their education, just to get that kind of information for them. And secondly, on Laramie 1 and Laramie 2, there's a big difference between the model, close to $2,000 difference, $1,800 difference between the model average beginning teacher salary between those two districts. And if you know what's really driving that, we got a highly populated Laramie County number one, which I would think the economies of scale, the starting salary would probably be lower. And in Laramie 2, the starting salaries are actually lower as far as the model generated, and you don't have the economies of scale. So I'm trying to figure out why is that model making that distinction when I would think intuitively it would just be exactly the opposite.
Jed, do you have
Madam Chairman, I would remind the committee that Laramie 1 does receive a regional cost adjustment, so that's going to be part of the variation there, and that the model average beginning salary is based off of the 2005-06 recalibration, so adjusted with the ECA since then. So when you look at the model average beginning teacher salary in the first column, that's representative of that ECA-adjusted amount since 2005 and 06. So it's strictly using that data to provide the model amount. The adjustment really wouldn't take into account the current practices of the district in their hiring or pay scales.
Laramie 1 gets an adjustment, and Laramie 2 doesn't get an adjustment for cost of living?
Right.
And Mr. Wilmar, you want to add to this?
Madam Chair, Senator Meyer, all school districts receive a regional cost adjustment.
Yeah.
I don't know if Laramie 1's is higher than Laramie 2. I'll have to look at that difference. But also the additional considerations when you look at salaries is each individual school district's experience and education levels. So if Laramie number 1 has a more educated and more experienced workforce than Laramie number 2, then those will be adjusted within the model to pay for those higher salaries.
Madam Chairman, that
go ahead.
That even includes the model beginning teacher salary?
Yeah.
Madam Chair, Senator Ryan, that does not. So what that would indicate to me is Laramie 1 has a greater regional cost adjustment than Laramie 2.
Senator Meyer?
I guess I need to look at the regional cost adjustment a little bit, because I would think it'd be almost at least as expensive to live out in Laramie County 1, because you got to drive the town to buy everything, and it's the same. I mean, everybody does their shopping in Cheyenne, that's in Laramie County 2, so I can't understand what's going on with that regional cost thing. That doesn't make any sense if there's an $1,800 difference.
Madam Chair, Senator Meyer, one caveat with the regional cost adjustment: each school district uses the greater of the hedonic wage index or the Wyoming cost of living index with
right.
a base of one. The hedonic wage index is an index at each school district level, so it takes into each characteristics of each of the individual school districts. And the Wyoming cost of living index takes into account at a county level. That's produced by the Economic Analysis Division here for the state. So what I assume is that and I'll double check this for you, the Laramie County School District number 2's hedonic wage index is lower than their Wyoming cost of living index, and so they're using that, and Laramie County School District's hedonic wage index is greater than their WCLI, and they're using that.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's probably housing.
Go ahead, Matt.
Madam Chair, Senator Meyer, the first question you had was the individual salaries at the elementary school, middle school, and high school. Each district adopts a district-wide teacher salary schedule, so there is no difference in whether you teach at an elementary school, middle school, or high school. Those are district-level salary decisions. And so when a teacher looks at a salary at a school district, they're looking at a district-wide salary amount, not an individual elementary, middle, or high school.
Mr. Hanson.
Madam Chair, the percentages and the dollars that Jed referred to in his comments can all be found on page 13 of 13. If you want to just look at that briefly, this is where he was referring to that all in all, the districts pay their staff from aides through teachers and school administrators, tutors. It falls within 2.8% of what the model does. So where they're paying more in one particular area, they're paying less in another particular area. So.
Senator Nicholas, are you ready?
Yeah, I'm just fascinated. The three districts that I'm looking at are Campbell, Laramie 1, and Natrona 1. So all of them, I mean, the largest, of course, is Laramie 1, with 182 positions underreported, and looking like there's a surplus of almost $5 million a year just from the wages. Natrona has an underage of 87 positions, also with a surplus of $5 million on wages alone. Campbell looks, they're only 32 positions, but they're still 32 positions under. Now, their surplus is down about $600,000. And I guess what I'd like, Matt, is maybe to have, you know, I'd like to get some feedback from those big districts. But, you know, my concern is have we started out with a model that clearly favored the smaller schools. And when you look at this, you wonder if we created, now are migrated to a model that really favors the large districts where they get to create these surpluses, and whether we're overestimating their employment needs. Although when you look at Campbell, they're a little closer. So, you know, one is a question of whether they just simply elected to hire fewer employees or offer higher salaries. But the other question to ask is, does a model generate more than they need? In contrast, look at Fremont. What's the issue with Fremont 14? And so Fremont 14 I think it was Fremont 14. So Fremont 14 shows is another outlier where they've got 111 more positions than, or 37 more positions than they are modeled for, and that looks like they're running a deficit of $1.9 million every year on their, just on salaries alone. Does anybody have a sense of what's causing that outlier? Do they have other federal funds out there available to them? Fred, do you know?
Mr. Wilmer? Or Mr. Hanson, go ahead.
Madam Chair, I believe they get impact aid.
Impact
aid from the federal government on top of our funding.
Matt?
You know, I wonder if you can. A lot of districts get it, but could you give us a summary of who gets the impact aid and how much?
Certainly.
Other questions on the report? Thank you, Mr. Ciccarelli. Committee, other questions of the Department of Education? Mr. Richards?
Madam Chair, I had some information relative to Senator Meyer's question. There was a 2006 AG opinion relative to the use of school foundation funds for the a BIA school in St. Stephen's, and at that time he opined that those funds could not be used for the BIA school.
Right. Good. Okay. Superintendent Hill or Mr. Hanson?
May I? Madam Chairman and committee, I was taken aback by the plane issue, and so I wanted to give an example to Representative Harshman before we left. Can we do that, Representative Harshman? Or is that okay, Madam Chairman?
Go ahead.
Okay. I want to, you know that you have a STEM program in Casper, and we took the plane to Casper and picked up your curriculum director, the person who's in charge of your STEM, your school board member, and a state board of education member. And we went to Rock Springs, and we visited the Rock Springs STEM program that is extraordinary. And then we went to Jackson that evening, and we visited and watched their robotics. And then we came back to Rock Springs and dropped everyone off and went to Casper and dropped everyone back and then came back to Cheyenne. That is a six-leg trip. And so when you say that approximately 36 legs, I want you to know that that could be six trips just like that, and that's how we do our business. So thank you for asking the question. I hope that we can be always clear about how that works. Thank you so much, Madam Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity today.
You're welcome. Thank you, everyone. Oh, I'm sorry.
That report, Madam Chair, that report had 20 hours used by the Department of Ed in 2012, 20 hours of jet time.
Thank you for the clarification. 20 hours, okay? Any other further comments? All right. Thank you very much. Merry Christmas. Committee, we'll be back. Committee, we'll be right back at... committee, we've got a lot of work yet to get done today, and so I want you back and in your seats by 1 o'clock so we can start work with Mr. Cattalier and then follow with the bills that we need to look at. Thank you. Lunch, I'm assuming, is in the same place. Thank you.